You know, I used to do this show, and all I used to do, I'd have a scissors, and I'd clip out articles. Now I've just got this console here at WRIF loaded with printouts from different sources. I mean, not mysterious ones. In fact, you can go to my site, and I'm just looking at all our phones, which are now all on hold for some reason. I don't know why. Ralph Dizzy? Well, they, okay. You can call right now, 313-298-WRIF. Anyways, just to clip out articles. And I'd go to The Wire. That was, you know, like an AP or UPI. Wire would print out stories all the time. And we did it. I mean, I'll tell you. I could go back without a blink of an eye to the technology of 1939. I mean, there was kick-ass music, electric guitars. They had television, although no one had televisions. Radio, cars, central heating, all this other stuff is just eating up our time, our lives. All right, quit whining, Peter, and get on with the show. Okay, I got one of these dumbass emails from some right-wing fanatic, you know, and I just kind of tossed him off a note and didn't. It's 11 o'clock now, so if you're just joining us, we've been on for 5 minutes, but you haven't missed much. I've just been giving all the info about calling 313-298-WRIF. Call talkyes@yahoo.com if you want to reach me by email. But anyway, at calltalkyes@yahoo.com, Ron writes in, when it comes to Iraq, Peter, which side are you on? The side of insurgent fascism and tyranny, or the side of democracy and human rights? Which side are you on, Peter? Which side are you on? And I just imagine Ron envisioning being in person, and he has me going, what a dick. Anyways, here's what's going on. Well, we know about these insurgent fundamentalists. I mean, of course, we don't really know what's going on there and who all the people are. We know that some of the people that are attacking the American occupation forces are these far right wing anti-democratic fundamentalists who want Shia rule and all of that. Not very attractive to anybody from the West, and not to people like us that want that are angry that there's not more democratic control in our country. That we're ruled by elites, that in many ways democracy here is just kind of a shadow puppet show with the ultra-wealthy and the ultra-powerful ultimately controlling everything and then giving us the choice between a pair of black shoes or a pair of brown shoes. But they control the choices. In dictatorial countries, there's no choices. But in semi, which I would say most countries are, it's limited choices. Anyways, so here is what he would aver, that on one side, the great forces of democracy led by George Bush and the United States, which illegally invaded Iraq, either under absolutely false pretenses that it was so incompetent to realize weren't true, this whole BS about weapons of mass destruction, or they out-and-out lied. I won't hold you in suspense. I believe the latter. They knew there were no weapons of mass destruction. They don't invade countries that have weapons of mass destruction, like North Korea. They talk nice to North Korea. They say, let's make a deal. And North Korea says, we're going to drown you in a lake of fire. And they go, oh, no. Well, can't we give you a little aid if you'll get rid of your nuclear weapons? And they roar back something that... But so if you don't have any, you've got a good chance to get invaded, which is exactly why Iran wants the atomic bomb. And that's why Pakistan has, that's why India has. It's not like they want to conquer anybody. It's not like Iran has got plans to conquer what? Afghanistan or Iran or Saudi Arabia or anything like that. They want to stop the United States from invading, and they want to stop Israel from attacking them. So they want to develop the atomic bomb. All right, but here we go. So on one side are these insurgent fascists. Some of them are. Some of them just don't like their country being invaded by the West. And on the other side is democracy and human rights, according to Ron. Well, and we'll talk about the elections. You can call up about those if you have any opinion about them. 313-298-WRIF. This is from the Interpress Service. Abuse, torture by Iraqi police called routine. Despite the millions of dollars spent by the U.S. and other nations, millions? Damn. How are these people counting? Despite the millions of dollars spent by the U.S. and other nations to improve their performance, Iraqi police still routinely abuse and often torture detainees, according to a report released this last Tuesday by Human Rights Watch. Method of torture. These are the people that Ron identifies as the side of democracy and human rights. Methods of torture include routine beatings using cables, hose pipes, and other implements, kicking, slapping, and punching, prolonged suspension from the wrist with hands tied behind the back, electric shocks to sensitive parts of the body, including earlobes and genitals, and being kept blindfolded or handcuffed continuously over several days, according to the 93-page report. These are our boys, right? Based on investigations carried out in Iraq between July and October last year, including interviews with 90 former prisoners, the report, The New Iraq, Torture and Ill-Treatment of Detainees in Iraqi Custody, also found that arrests were frequently carried out without warrants on the basis of information provided by, quote, secret informants. The detention system was also found to be rife with corruption, according to the report, which noted that police officials routinely demanded bribes for visits by family members and attorneys for appearances before a judge, and even for food and water. These practices are what Ron calls the side of democracy and human rights. So it sounds a lot like Saddam Hussein's government, doesn't it? Also, the American Civil Liberties Union released documents on Monday describing complaints of serious abuse of Iraqi citizens, including reports of electric shocks and forced sodomies, and accused the U.S. military of not thoroughly investigating the cases. The documents list dozens of allegations of abuse at American detention centers. The use of cigarettes to burn prisoners, aggressive dogs, electric shocks, sexual humiliation, and beatings that began about the same time such acts were occurring at Abu Ghraib. And none of these are being investigated. This, again, is the side of democracy and human rights, according to Ron. And we know, of course, that just all the bad stuff that has gone on in Iraq, the abuse of prisoners, are rogue soldiers. What's that guy's name? Grainer. Guy's, you know, this awful guy was a prison guard in the U.S. and Pennsylvania. Probably did the same damn thing to prisoners. Wait a minute. I'm getting a note from Roth Dizzy. He says, nobody wants to be on hold for 30 minutes. Are you telling them they're going to be on hold for 30 minutes? Don't tell them. Tell them they're going to be on in a minute. All right. Pretend you didn't hear this. All right. So it's just these rogues. Well, as we can see by all these documents, it's widespread. British soldiers accused of Iraqi abuse go on trial. British court-martial prosecuting soldiers accused of abuse released photographs on Tuesday that show British troops forcing Iraqi prisoners to simulate sex acts, punching them, binding prisoners to prongs of a forklift truck, and on and on and on. Denmark charges 5 soldiers with Iraqi prisoner abuse. A Danish intelligence officer, and it just goes on and on and on and on and on. So what we have here is not some aberration. This is, what do they call it? SOP, Standard Operating Procedure. This is the side of democracy and human rights that Ron wants us to be on, right? Gitmo soldier details sexual tactics. Female interrogators tried to break Muslim detainees at the U.S. prison camp in Guantanamo Bay by sexually touching, wearing a miniskirt and thong underwear, and in one case, smearing a Saudi man's face with fake menstrual blood. This goes on and on. This is besides all the actual tortures that went on there. Maybe these women. I mean, these are American soldiers. Somebody's daughter out there that is grabbing a Muslim prisoner's cojone. Maybe she could write a book called I Was a Slut for the Terror War. How about that? Maybe that would work. And finally, one other little thing here. Remember Fallujah, that great victory in the war on terror? This is from an article on Common Dreams called The Invasion of Fallujah, Studying the Subversion of Truth. Although there has been resounding silence about the humanitarian disaster in Fallujah, the true cost of the civilian population is emerging. Preliminary estimates are as high as 6,000 Iraqis killed, a third of the city destroyed, and over 200,000 civilians living as refugees. It's estimated that it could be months before people are allowed to return to what is left of their homes, according to a UN emergency working group on the humanitarian crisis. There are shortages of food items and cooking fuel. Temperatures have dropped, underscoring an urgent need for winterization items and appropriate shelter. The International Committee for the Red Cross reported that three of the city's water purification plants had been destroyed and a fourth badly damaged by the United States. Military. Aid organizations have repeatedly been denied access to the city hospitals and refugee populations in the surrounding areas. But Ron says this is the side of democracy and human rights. Well, it must be. They voted. And that's what democracy is all about, right? Oh, yeah, the one final item. When you look at your paycheck again and you know, 25% to 30% of it is gone, listen to this. You know, Bush is asking for billions and billions of dollars more. U.S. occupation authority in Iraq was unable to keep track of nearly $9 billion it transferred to government ministries, which lacked financial controls, security, communications, and adequate staff, according to the inspector general. The U.S. officials relied on Iraqi audit agencies to account for the funds, but those offices were not even functioning when the funds were transferred between October 2003 and June 2004. So, our tax dollars, yours and mine, that slice out of our check is going for the forces of, what did Ron call it, the side of democracy and human rights. So $9 billion went somewhere. Didn't get lost in the wash. Somebody's got it in their pocket. You and I worked our butts off for it. I don't work so hard. A lot of you do. But I still work. I do a lot for this show. And where it wound up in? Because of the carelessness of the Bush racket? Because they don't care. It's not their money. For one thing, they're rich on their own. They've ripped off enough people through Halliburton and Enron and the pharmaceuticals and banking and telecommunications and all that. All the people that benefit the most from this crooked, corrupt government that we have ruling us. Yeah, they don't care. So $9 billion goes, what the hell? You know, probably if it's a racket, I mean, what the, you know, they're gonna be hooked into us all the more. Yeah, I'm going to let it go at that. I got a lot more to say because I didn't even talk about the elections, did I? But maybe you'll want to do that. All right, let me just go through the basics. Peter Werby here with you, WRIF in Detroit, and I give the city because many of you are listening around the country and the, around the world. 313-298-WRIF and call talkyes at yahoo.com. Let's take our first caller right now. It's John from Warren. John, it's wait a minute. You got to hold on here because all of a sudden I got to figure out. Oh, yeah, here it is. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I was wanting to call and talk about that shooting that happened at the Toledo G plant.
Yeah. Remind people that was national news, but remind people what happened.
Well, I don't know. The story that first came out kind of sounded like the guy had got some time off, some disciplinary time off, but then it kind of seems like the next day that was kind of like swept under the rug, and they said, oh, well, no, the guy wasn't having any disciplinary problems at work, and the meeting that they had with his supervisors, everything was fine, and, you know, that the meeting was dismissed and everything was amicable. But that's obviously not what happened. I mean, the guy had been working at that plant for, you know, 20-some years, and...
What do you make of it all?
I'm surprised it hadn't happened sooner.
How come? What do you mean?
Well, that's just the way that auto plants are run and operated. You know, management consistently belittles and, you know, condescends when they talk to people, you know, and that guy probably just had enough and snapped.
You're not excusing that, though.
No, not at all.
I mean, there's a difference between excusing something and explaining something.
Yeah, I'm just saying I'm surprised it hasn't happened sooner.
Well, you know, it's strange. Back, I was just reading about this in a book about Detroit. There was a man named James Johnson. I think that was his name. Johnson was his last name. And he walked into an auto plant 30-something years ago and opened fire on supervisors and what have you. And in the last 20 years... we have that expression going postal, which the postal authorities hate, by the way. It becomes, I can't think of another phrase other than this kind of little pop psychology one, but they say acting out. So people act out that rage because there's other things to do. I mean, even if you're totally frustrated, I mean, I don't want to encourage anybody to take any kind of violence, but kind of punching somebody's a little bit better than shooting up the joint, right? And then committing suicide. But it sort of comes out to be the ultimate statement of frustration and rage.
Right, which leads me to believe that that had to have been an ongoing thing for, you know, weeks or months or even years to for a person to get to the point where, you know, they come in with a gun and just start shooting people, you know.
Well, it's becoming more and more common, and, I mean, American workers, the whole workforce, middle class and working class, are under such intense pressure that we work more than any industrial force in the world.
Yeah, we got to compete with people in China making, you know, 40 cents an hour, and we can't.
Well, it's not just that. I mean, we also we would think we were similar to our fellow workers in Canada and Northern Europe, and they all get like a month off paid vacation by law, the minimum wage. I don't know what the minimum wage is in Canada, but it sure is a hell of a lot more than the pathetic one here in the richest country in the world. And the time off is the lowest of any. I mean, we work more than any other industrialized country, and it particularly doing industrial work. It takes a toll on some people, not very many when you think about it, but every time it does, it has catastrophic effects, obviously. All right, John, thank you very much. Thanks for calling us. Anyone else has any comments on that, please give us a shout-out. I got a bunch of open lines. Maybe I haven't said anything provocative enough. I'll work on it in a second. But in the meantime, you can call up at 313-298-WRIF. Here's Ken in Dearborn. Ken, you're on the air. Welcome.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was wondering what you thought about all these yellow ribbons. And
Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, don't you think that it says support our troops, but with half of all tax dollars going to the military, how are they not being supported?
Yeah, I'm never quite sure. We actually went through this on a program one time about what that exactly meant. I mean, I think that I'm giving the ultimate support. Well, I mean, I shouldn't say that, but the ultimate political support to the American Armed Forces by doing everything I can to get them out of there as soon as they can, so they won't come to any harm and they won't harm any more people. There are people that are actually involved in very concrete support by sending, I mean, other than just their relatives. But you can go to, I can't remember all the names of the groups, but there's all sorts of military family groups and groups of that are opposed to the war and want to get that have members of their family in the service and want to get them out of there as quickly as possible. But politically, I would say that I'm giving them the best support they can. It's partly manipulated by the right wing to say support our troops, which means support Bush's war policies. But in a free and democratic society, we have to continue a debate, particularly when you have such a dishonest government that's lied about the war all along. But in some of those yellow ribbons, some of them say, bring our troops home. Some of them say, support our troops, bring them home without harm. But I think Americans, whatever they feel about the war, are concerned about our soldiers being in harm's way. I mean, I'd like to extend my feelings to everyone who's being hurt, including the Iraqis. Most Americans don't do that, I would say, unfortunately.
But the truth, one thing that the ruling class has learned in the last 100 years, that if it put forward a truthful political slogans to justify U.S. government policy, it would never win public favor.
I mean, you don't think they could get away with we want blood for oil?
The truth is that 1% of the U.S. population owns 40% of the wealth of the country, and the richest 1% of that 1% are the dominant powers of the capitalist establishment. So this tiny capitalist class dominates the political establishment and owns the media. And
Well, here's a good website for you in Detroit. A great sort of punk R&B singer, Senator O'Brien. That's actually his given name, Senator O'Brien. I think his father was actually a state senator. So it's Senator O'Brien, OBRIEN.com. And he's got a new album out called Inauguration that I hope gets on to Motor City Riffs, our local music show that precedes this. But some of the same stuff, like the top 20% of individuals in this country own 83% of all the wealth. The bottom 20% own zero. And then, so what would that be? So the 60% of us kind of in the middle, we share 17% of all the wealth. And but hey, you know, we got to make sure that we keep our eye on the Michael Jackson case, because that's a lot more important. Thank you, Ken.
Okay, thanks.
Appreciate your call. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. It's so dreary talking about the budget and all that. None of us really give a damn, do we? Because what does it all mean, and how can we all affect it? Bush aides, this isn't even critics. The White House announced on Tuesday that the federal budget deficit was expected to rise this year to $427 billion. So many of you think, well, what the hell? I owe $35,000 on my credit card and I just pay the basic minimum. Well, you know how that goes. The White House's announcement makes it the fourth straight year in which the budget deficit was expected to grow. Bush said it was going to fall by 25%. Actually, it's increased, and this doesn't even include a lot of the money that's going to have to be spent on these fools' war in Iraq. It does include part of an additional $80 billion that Bush requested, mostly for Iraq. They got to pay Halliburton and all the rest of those companies that are making a fortune. Of course, they lose a lot of it, as we just learned. A lot of it just slips in through the cracks, goes to this corrupt official and another. Neither estimates include the cost of privatizing part of the Social Security program, which Bush, more insanity, more lies, of course. Remember, he was the guy that said there was weapons of mass destruction. Condoleezza Rice, a professional liar who screwed up everything, including 9/11 and Iraq, that told the American people, that ignored the threats from, what was his name? Osama bin Forgotten, and assured the American people that we were under direct nuclear threat in Iraq. So what happens to her? She gets promoted, right? And even most of the Democrats vote for her. Debbie Stabenow from Michigan disgraced our state by voting for her confirmation. Thank you to Carl Levin, the other senator, for voting against it. I mean, what the hell was with Debbie Stabenow? I was at this Martin Luther King Day observance. And I'm thinking, man, she just came down to this funky church in Detroit. I'm sorry, Ed Rowe, my pal, the minister there. But, it's not like some rich suburban church or anything like that. This is a church that has to have fundraising, which I'll tell you about. Someone's coming up for it. And there's Debbie Stabenow, along with Congressman John Conyers and a number of other people. So I'm thinking, this woman's got some heart. So, and what does she have to lose by voting against Condoleezza Rice, this liar, this person exposed as a liar? But when you're in the Bush administration, neither incompetence or being caught lying in public has any effect on whether you get advancement or not. You just have to be a loyal retainer to the emperor. Right? Anyways, if they got this cockamamie privatization scheme into it, the cost of creating these private accounts would range from $1 trillion to $2 trillion over the next 2 years. The money ain't there, folks. If you're like 14 and 15, you're going to be totally screwed. If you're like in your 20s, 30s, and 40s, I don't know. The older you are in this case, the better off you are. Because there's this whole other thing that I can't even read. It's in the business section. U.S. faces more tension abroad as dollar slides. And the only thing I have, it's so technical. It said, should the dollar continue to fall, if, for example, global investors determine that Bush did not have the willingness to hold spending down, see, they're going to cut all these government programs like schools and roads and police and what have you. Would not only add to tensions, it might also force up interest rates at home in order to keep foreigners bailing us out. Because if the, you know, they, what are they going to do? We're in hock to these foreign banks that keep buying up U.S. debt. So part of what we see going out of our paycheck goes to foreign countries to pay the interest on the debt that Bush has run up with his tax cuts for the wealthy and this insane war. All right, let's take another call right now. It's Eric from Warren. Eric, it's Peter Werbe. Welcome to the show. Hold on one second here. I got a new setup here. All right, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, I was wondering, I know you don't like Bush. Been listening to you for a long time. What do you think of some of these local people like Kwame and Jennifer Granholm?
Well, damn. Kwame Kilpatrick. I mean, this is a city that's on the way to ruin, and it's kind of hard to get anybody creative. So what you have are these people involved, like the mayor of Detroit, and these small corruptions, this thing with this big luxury car and what have you. I don't know. What's your problem with Granholm?
No, I just wondered what you thought about some of these local people. You know, I hear about the corruption in the federal government, but I was just wondering, or you think they're doing a good job?
No, well, I mean, I don't even know if you could do a good job in Detroit, although it doesn't seem that Kwame Kilpatrick is doing a particularly good job. I never could figure out who the hell runs the city of Detroit. I mean, you got a mayor, you got a figure there, you got the city council, but this entity called Detroit, we call ourselves Detroiters, even if we live in the suburbs, and it just seems to be, not promising. Metro Times had an interesting article about some solutions. Someone one time said, why don't we talk about some solutions? Maybe I should have brought that in and suggested some ways we can turn around what's really happening, this steady erosion of Detroit. Now, I don't think Kwame Kilpatrick exactly helping the situation. All right, Eric, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. We can also take Michael from Brownstown. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
I was just wondering, what's your opinion with Lockheed Martin getting the new contract to make the helicopter for the president now?
Well,
knowing that I forget the name of the company that has made it, but it's all been American made. All the parts have.
Sikorsky.
That's right. And then with Lockheed, now all the parts are going to be made overseas and then assembled in the U.S. And do you think that has anything to do with Bush's connection with Texas, with the same as Lockheed?
It's right there, isn't it? Now, Sikorsky's had the helicopter contract forever. You know what I was shocked at? Just the cost of government. I mean, we take this all for granted. How many helicopters are they making, like 17 or something?
I believe Lockheed did sign up for, I thought it was 20, but it might be 17.
No, something like that. Just the extraordinary expense of running this administrative operation. I mean, well, when you raise the presidencies to the level of royalty rather than just the sort of the chief administrative officer of a government, I suppose all of this goes with it. I mean, I'll bet you that you and I could sit down and probably cut about $500 billion out of what this government spends, and not hurt any of the citizens.
The way I felt when I heard it, I actually caught the end of it on TV, and it's another one of Bush's ways to outsource jobs to me. I mean,
yeah, you know, there's some other wrinkle to it, and I can't remember what it is. It's connected up. Aren't the parts being, where are they being made in Britain?
Yeah, they're going to be made over in Europe.
Yeah, that's something. This was like a payoff to Blair for supporting this war, when the English people, like everyone else in the world, the people of every other country in the world, of course, now the United States population thinks it was a mistake to get involved in it, so everyone agrees. But you know, huge numbers of British think that this was terrible and Blair never should have got into it. So,
true.
All right, thank you very much. Yeah, so they're more outsourcing, making the helicopters for at least the parts. They're going to be assembled, I believe, in New York or Connecticut, and one or the other. So they're going to keep at least that aspect of it there. All right, thanks a lot. Appreciate your call. Hey, Michael Moore, when we come back.
Your opinion matters. Call 312.
Tired of low-price LASIK ads that promise a great price only to find that it quadruples when you actually go there? Well, you'll never have that experience with Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. At the Lake Laser Eye Center, there are no gimmicks and no games. Only $9.99 an eye or as low as $33 per month per eye. You know your costs up front with no hidden charges. You receive top personalized service and see Dr. Combati himself at each visit. The Lake Laser Eye Center is not an assembly line designed to get people in and out as quickly as possible. They are committed to you and offer the highest standards of eye care using the state-of-the-art Visix S4 laser with active eye tracking. One visit to Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center and you'll understand why he's one of the most respected and accurate eye surgeons in Michigan. You owe it to yourself to receive the best care for the best price. Appointments are going fast. Call Lake Laser Eye Center today at 1-877-UC-MORE. That's 1-877-UC-MORE. Again, 1-877, the letter U, S-E-E-M-O-R-E. Or visit UCMORE.com. These are your eyes, and this is the care you deserve. You've searched today like every other day for those annoying reading glasses. It's gotten to the point where you just can't see the newspaper without them. Well, now you don't have to search for your glasses anymore due to a new procedure from Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center called Near Vision CK. Near Vision CK is a safe, simple, 5-minute procedure that's usually done on one eye and for just $9.99 or as low as $33 a month. This exciting procedure will finally eliminate your need for reading glasses. Call Dr. Combati today at the Lake Laser Eye Center, 1-877-UC-MORE, to set up your free consultation. You'll see Dr. Combati himself, and he'll take the time to answer all of your questions and thoroughly explain the Near Vision CK procedure. That number again is 1-877, the letter U, S-E-E-M-O-R-E, or you can visit the website, www.useemore.com, for Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. And get ready to throw those reading glasses away.
There are so many choices in mortgages these days for the first-time homebuyer and even for experienced homeowners looking simply to refinance. Searching for a mortgage can be a frustrating and confusing time. Why not let Financial Independence Mortgage make your financing search easier? Financial Independence Mortgage provides you with all the relevant information about mortgages and will find you the perfect mortgage to fit your personal needs. It's as simple as filling out a one-page application, and Financial Independence won't make you wait long for your approval. Typically, you'll get a response within 24 hours. Get a free quote from all of the top lending institutions so you know you have a fair comparison of what's available to you on the market. You simply can't find a better, more thorough, more personalized way to ensure yourself of getting the best mortgage at the best rate possible. Competitive rates, very fast closing times, and Financial Independence Mortgage can handle exactly the type of mortgage to fit your personal needs, whether or not you have some blemishes on your credit. Find out today the difference Financial Independence Mortgage can make for you at 248-594-7582. That's Financial Independence Mortgage at 248-594-7582.
It's coming to the Novi Expo Center on Saturday, April 2nd. It's the 4th Annual Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by your Detroit Dodge dealers. If you own a company or retail shop, such as a skate shop, men's clothing store, fitness and health, tax service, sporting goods, jewelry store, music and entertainment, furniture, golf, gadgets, or anything that interests men, this is your opportunity to introduce your product or service to thousands of metro area men. To participate in the Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. Many special features and attractions will be announced soon. To participate in Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. You've got to be there. The Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by Dodge. Grab life by the horns.
Michigan winter. Bitter cold, snow, sleet, freezing rain, black ice on the roads.
Okay, I'll bet Maui sounds really good right now, huh?
It's back.
The Motor City's favorite rip tradition.
As 101, WRIF and Budweiser present Maui Time 2K5.
How would you like to jet off to Hawaii with Big Daddy Arthur P, soaking in the sunshine on the pristine beaches of Kahanapali in Maui? Then just listen for the poobah to say those three magic words.
When you hear it, be Motor City Color 33 on the rip lines.
Just like that, you could be having some serious fun in the sun, chilling on beautiful Kahanapali Beach in Maui.
Plus, listen for details on Maui Waui parties throughout the Motor City, where you can win a trip to Maui in person.
Maui Time 2K5.
The rip tradition continues.
Brought to you by Budweiser. Hey, Detroit, this bud's for you.
From your home for Maui Time 2K5.
101 WRIF.
Your chance to take control of the WRIF playlist.
With the guy who lost control a long time ago.
The Riffs All Request Riff and Rock at 9 o'clock. With Meltdown, the big unit.
Weekday nights at 9.
On 101 WRIF.
Detroit's Rock Station.
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 Hello, how are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We relived an unfortunate encounter we had with Santa Claus from a few years back when we learned he wasn't wearing the required Santa outfit in its entirety. It was disgusting.
Do you wear the big black belt?
I have a big black belt, yes.
Okay, all right.
Well, and you're I don't just wear it continuously.
But when you're going to schools and stuff, surely you've got the black belt on and everything, right?
Well, it's not really necessary. They recognize me.
Oh, man, what do you show up in jeans or something? I mean,
Santa, you can't be in civilian clothes when you're Santa Claus.
I can't?
No,
you can't just waltz in there with a T-shirt, with a pack of Marlboros in the pocket, and some jeans, boots.
I don't do that.
No? No.
I try to answer all the letters. I usually enclose a picture.
Uh-huh.
Santa Claus.
With the hat on?
Knows me. I think one or two of them has a hat on.
All right.
I'm not too sure your dipstick's touching all, but
sends them in the nude.
Yeah, yeah, maybe I'm a couple bricks short of a load, Santa.
Yeah, your elevator don't go to the top.
Yeah, that's my kind of Santa. Just rips people.
Christmas off your ass. How high?
Stop it!
Drew and Mike in the morning. Yes. The broadcast program.
On the Riff.
101-101.
Riff.
Rocks.
And now, the Riff presents this Detroit Lions Super Bowl moment.
Thank you.
This Detroit Lions Super Bowl moment has been brought to you by 101 WRIF. This station rocks.
All day Thursday, your walk right in free station, 101 The Riff, unleashes a ticket blitz Thursday. Keep your radio locked on 101 WRIF all day this Thursday
for your chance to hook up with tickets to all of the hottest concerts and events happening around the Motor City.
Hooking you up like no other Detroit station can.
Listen for your chance to win.
Then call the Riff request line at 313-298-WRIF.
Don't forget.
You can always improve your chances to win by joining the Riff Cyber Crew today and score your totally unfair internet advantage.
Just log on to WRIF.com.
It's Ticket Blitz Thursday
on the Riff.
All day Thursday
from your walk right in free station.
101 The Riff.
Because the mainstream media, you know, they hate Michael Moore. Michael Moore, yeah, I like him pretty much, but I love him because he just gets under the skin of right-wingers and even the mainstream media. Well, even though he's had an extreme makeover, if you've seen him lately. Anyways, 2 days after being snubbed from the Oscar nominations, and it wasn't, you know, this is weird. He wasn't snubbed. He failed to earn an Academy Award nomination because in the documentary category, because he planned a TV airing before the November 2nd election, and he was disqualified under the Academy rules. And the idea that he would get Best Picture is absurd. So there really wasn't much of a contest there. They nominated six movies for this is the Writers Guild of America. They for documentary writing. The Hunting of the President. So most of these are anti-Bush documentaries, which talks about the campaign against Bill Clinton from his early days in Arkansas through his impeachment. Sorry, that's not anti-Bush, but just anti-right-wing and Republican. Control Room. It's an incredible film. I highly recommend it. It's an inside view of the Arab television network Al Jazeera during the war in Iraq. Bright Leaves, a reflection on Big Tobacco by the great-grandson of a tobacco baron. Home of the Brave, a wonderful film about murdered civil rights activist Viola Liuzzo, who's from Detroit. A couple others as well. There's this little state of Qatar, which is this ally of the United States in the Persian Gulf. And we got a military base there, and it loves America. It's this absolutist dictatorship. Well, Cheney, Rumsfeld, Condi Rice, and other Bush administration officials have complained regularly and heatedly to Qatari leaders that Al Jazeera's broadcasts have been inflammatory, misleading, and occasionally false, especially on Iraq. So they're trying to pressure Qatar to get rid of Al Jazeera. Now, hey, I mean, shouldn't we get rid of all media that's inflammatory, misleading, and occasionally false? I mean, glad we don't have anything like that here, right? All right, let's go back to our phones. How do I do this on my new little system here? 313-298-WRIF. And, all right, I got it again. I figured it out. It's Joy from Ypsilanti. Joy, it's Peter Werby, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hello.
Hi.
I go to Eastern, and I'm actually in the film program there in the broadcasting. And what people don't understand is that when there's a documentary made, it is a person's slant or view on something. And it drives me nuts when people say, it's untruthful. It's untruthful. And it's almost like they don't want to accept the facts. But regardless, he can put a slant on any way he wants to because it's his documentary, you know?
Like Michael Moore, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you watch a World War II documentary, there's a slant on that, and people can do that because, you know, they're making it. So it's very frustrating when people say, oh, Michael Moore's the devil because he doesn't, you know, he's doing it his way. Well, yeah.
Well, there's a slant on everything. It's impossible to present anything through a medium, in other words, the plural is
exactly.
Media, right, without certain presuppositions or certain a view of the world built in. And
absolutely.
Those people that say, oh, I'm just presenting the news objectively, those are the people to be the most worrisome about. Yeah.
Yeah, it's never the news reported. I mean, even when you have the Bush administration doing press releases, how do we know that that's true and that's all, you know, full of facts? Because, you know, we just don't. I greatly appreciate you and, you know, Michael Moore, for instance, getting this out to the public. This is what's going on, because if you don't watch the news, you don't read the newspaper, and you don't know what's going on, then you're shutting the world out, and then someday you will wake up. I mean, when I'm 21 years old, and there will not be Social Security for me.
No.
You know, and it's scary. It's sickening, and it's scary, and it's, you know, it's very, very sad.
Well, thank you, Joy.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us at 313-298-WRIF. Here's Christina in Ypsilanti. Hi, Christina. You're on the air.
Yes. Hi, how are you?
Doing good.
Good. Wonderful. I listen to your show as often as I can. I adore it.
Thank you.
What I wanted to say, I have several comments, and, you know, I'm kind of an old lady, but I try to listen to what the young kids have to say, and it seems to me that I see a cyclical difficulty over the past 50 years that, you know, this up-and-coming generation's going to have to deal with the same things that we had to deal with after the Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning major debt. Well, $800 billion is not small potatoes. That's a lot of debt. And if the generation now coming up through the high schools and the colleges can carry that much debt, I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think they should have to.
I don't know how they're going to pull this off. I mean, it obviously is all about greed. and shifting more and more money to the already wealthy, no matter whether it's Bush's tax policies or this attack on our Social Security system or even the war, which transfers a lot of our wealth that we make on our jobs and turns it over to, you know, these friends of the Bush gang. But at some point, I mean, just like we can tell ourselves, yeah, I'm carrying $30,000 of credit card debt and I just pay the minimum and I'll make it through and all that. Chickens come home to roost, and this could be a big fat chicken down the road. You can keep this shadow play going for I don't know how many years, but at some point, someone's going to say, hey, we want all our money, and or in the form of refusing any more to prop up the dollar or to support or to continue to invest in the United States, which means we won't have operating funds. And this could start a wave of a worldwide depression. If these guys are rich, how come they're not smart? I don't get it.
Why? Because they don't have it in their environment anymore to regenerate. Yeah, they're in a situation of degeneration. The whole country's in a state of degeneration because of the environment and on and on.
You mean the actual, the economic environment or the
physical environment?
Oh, yeah.
You can't regenerate a clean, make a smart mind with dirty water in your system or bad air around you or bad food. You can't do it.
Yeah, and what did we find out? That Wayne County is something like almost 300% over acceptable levels. And we say, oh, well, gee, that's too bad. And yet the reason that this is because the government allows these polluters, because the Bush Co. is in bed with the polluters, and they've rolled back something like 400 separate executive orders that protect our environment and hence protect us at the behest of the polluters. They've put the polluters and the planet rapers, the forest choppers, whoever, into positions of supervision of our environment, our environment. It's like us and all. But, you know, they breathe the same crap. They drink the same water. No matter how rich they are, no matter how much more money they turn over to the big corporations, they're living on the same planet. Like when they put this monstrosity of this waste incinerator in Detroit. It was going right over Grosse Pointe, you know, the richest area around here. It wasn't like, okay, I mean, it was, of course, they cited the facility right in the middle of a poor neighborhood. They wouldn't like, put it in Grosse Pointe. But still, they were sucking air. So maybe this is just insanity. There's this new book out by Jared Diamond, which, dear emailers, calltalkyes@yahoo.com, something about the choices societies make, and we're making some damn bad ones. Christina, thanks for calling us on the broadcast. Appreciate it. By the way, we didn't really even talk about the elections in Iraq. I advise you, because it's just seen as this wonderful event, this march towards democracy. I mean, you can't tell yet. I mean, it might be. It might be a democracy that says occupiers out. And you say, oh, isn't that what we want? Who knows which way it'll go after that? I mean, part of it is... some of these incidences and these portrayals are truly heartwarming, that people do want to control their own affairs. Some of it is people want to get in on the latest racket. Others think that it'll expedite the U.S. getting out of there. Many people voting against the violence. But when you talk about Bush declares Iraq election a success. Who's a success for is him. That Bush and the Republicans have a lot to lose over Iraq. I mean, they couldn't care less about the Iraqis that are dying by the tens of thousands. They couldn't care less about the American soldiers that die by the hundreds. They shed crocodile tears and, you know, peddle crap about patriotism and fight for freedom and all that. That's nonsense. Absolute nonsense. Their campaign to control oil in the Middle East and to be the dominant figure in a region 6,000 miles from our home country hasn't diminished. I mean, one of the items on this $80 billion that we're now going to further waste in Iraq is for a $1.3 billion embassy. that's going to be at the, you know, the control center. Now, a couple of things here. That the Republicans want to get rid of this Iraq issue before the 2006 elections. If this is still going on, if 3,000, 4,000 Americans have died by then, if tens of thousands of more Iraqis perish, if more cities are destroyed, they, of course, which is the big worry with them, the loss of power. They won't be able to have their way with dismantling the vestiges of decency in this country. So they want to end that. But also that Bush says that it's going to set an example of democracy for the rest of the Middle East. Now, do you really think that the tyrants of Saudi Arabia, the dictator of Egypt, the kings and sultans and emirs and what have you of all U.S. allies throughout that region, people that we're paying billions of our tax dollars towards in Egypt and Saudi Arabia and Qatar, in the United Arab Emirates, in Pakistan and all those countries, you think they're going, oh, no, we're going to get hit next? They know it's BS. They know that this talk about democracy is just jive. The rhetoric echoed Bush's pledge. This is from Yahoo News during his second inaugural. Later, he said the speech was not a new call to diplomatic arms because it raised misgivings in some countries that do not have democratic governments, but where the United States has diplomatic, strategic, and economic interests. China, Pakistan, and Saudi Arabia fit that description. So don't worry, guys. We're not talking about you. We're not going to disrupt your dictatorship or your little royal deal here. Few countries like Morocco, Kuwait, Bahrain, and Jordan have active parliaments, although the monarchs can veto legislative action. Only Lebanon has a functioning parliamentary democracy among the Arab countries in 21 countries. So is Bush talking about overthrowing every single one of them, invading everyone? Come on. Here's Stephen Livonia. Steve, it's Peter Werby. Thanks for joining me on the air.
How's it going, Pete?
Hi, good. Can you take your radio down? Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay. Hey, I was going to ask you about, you said that Iran worried about Israel attacking them, or is any country over there worried about Israel attacking them?
Well, they've been in wars with these Arab countries before on different bases. Sometimes they were invaded. Other times, historians feel they precipitated invasions in order to seize territories because they've expanded their country by through war, which is, of course, illegal under international law. And,
right.
Yeah.
Well, because I remember the 67 war was they were invaded, and that's how they got the Gaza Strip, if I'm not...
And the West Bank, right. Yeah. And it's illegal to continue to occupy areas won in war. But at least they are finally getting out of the Gaza Strip. But the West Bank, I think they intend eventually to annex and do it little by little.
So do you feel Israel is an aggressive nation?
Well, it plunked itself down, Europeans. It has the same characteristic of most white settler colonial nations, like the ones that wound up here in Canada and Australia, South Africa. That's of a part. There was an indigenous population that lived there. They were displaced. Countries like the United States and Canada mostly killed them all off. There's a pattern there, don't you think?
Well, I mean, from what I see, it's the Arabic nations that are more aggressive towards the Israelites. But, you know, I mean, maybe there's a spin on that. So.
Well, it's both ways. These undemocratic Arab dictatorships have used Israel to redirect what should be anger at their governments and their rule and their corruption and their waste, and always said that what's the real problem in Saudi Arabia? Or what's the real problem in Egypt? It's Israel. Well, that's not their biggest problem. And there certainly is a way in which all of that could be settled. I mean, first and foremost, that Israel needs to get completely out of the West Bank, which it has no right to be in.
Okay. Well, then I guess point I would like to make is, I guess any country can have. I mean, it's either no nukes or all nukes, right? I mean,
well,
we have.
Yeah.
We have nukes. They have nukes, right?
It is a little preposterous, particularly when you have countries like Pakistan and North Korea and India and Israel having nuclear weapons. I mean, I don't want to see any country with them. And the United States could have taken the lead in disarming the country or disarming the world. But Bush refused that when Putin, the president of Russia, offered to cut the number that the United States and Russia had by about 80%, and Bush said no. What really has to happen is a international call for nuclear disarmament. We're still under the nuclear gun. The fact that countries like Russia that has an ambivalent relationship, an ambiguous relationship with the United States and could be taken over by a hostile, by a government hostile to the United States, which is not too far out of the question, is truly frightening.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, we've been lucky so far, and I would say luck given some of the possibilities. There's an old adage that Napoleon said, and that was the only thing that you can't do with bayonets is sit on them.
Meaning words to the wise.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay, Pete. Thanks.
Appreciate it. All right. More calls. Well, let's do our break and we'll get right back to you.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby. There are so many choices in mortgages these days for the first-time homebuyer and even for experienced homeowners looking simply to refinance. Searching for a mortgage can be a frustrating and confusing time. Why not let Financial Independence Mortgage make your financing search easier? Financial Independence Mortgage provides you with all the relevant information about mortgages and will find you the perfect mortgage to fit your personal needs. It's as simple as filling out a one-page application, and Financial Independence won't make you wait long for your approval. Typically, you'll get a response within 24 hours. Get a free quote from all of the top lending institutions so you know you have a fair comparison of what's available to you on the market. You simply can't find a better, more thorough, more personalized way to ensure yourself of getting the best mortgage at the best rate possible. Competitive rates, very fast closing times, and Financial Independence Mortgage can handle exactly the type of mortgage to fit your personal needs, whether or not you have some blemishes on your credit. Find out today the difference Financial Independence Mortgage can make for you at 248-594-7582. That's Financial Independence Mortgage at 248-594-7582.
Tired of low-priced LASIK ads that promise a great price only to find that it quadruples when you actually go there? Well, you'll never have that experience with Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. At the Lake Laser Eye Center, there are no gimmicks and no games. Only $9.99 an eye or as low as $33 per month per eye. You know your costs up front with no hidden charges. You receive top personalized service and see Dr. Combati himself at each visit. The Lake Laser Eye Center is not an assembly line designed to get people in and out as quickly as possible. They are committed to you and offer the highest standards of eye care using the state-of-the-art Visix S4 laser with active eye tracking. One visit to Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center and you'll understand why he's one of the most respected and accurate eye surgeons in Michigan. You owe it to yourself to receive the best care for the best price. Appointments are going fast. Call Lake Laser Eye Center today at 1-877-UC-MORE. That's 1-877-UC-MORE. Again, 1-877, the letter U, S-E-E-M-O-R-E. Or visit UCMORE.com. These are your eyes, and this is the care you deserve. You've searched today like every other day for those annoying reading glasses. It's gotten to the point where you just can't see the newspaper without them. Well, now you don't have to search for your glasses anymore due to a new procedure from Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center called Near Vision CK. Near Vision CK is a safe, simple, 5-minute procedure that's usually done on one eye and for just $9.99 or as low as $33 a month. This exciting procedure will finally eliminate your need for reading glasses. Call Dr. Combati today at the Lake Laser Eye Center, 1-877-UC-MORE, to set up your free consultation. You'll see Dr. Combati himself, and he'll take the time to answer all of your questions and thoroughly explain the Near Vision CK procedure. That number again is 1-877, the letter U, S-E-E-M-O-R-E, or you can visit the website, www.useemore.com, for Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. And get ready to throw those reading glasses away.
It's coming to the Novi Expo Center on Saturday, April 2nd. It's the 4th annual Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by your Detroit Dodge dealers. If you own a company or retail shop, such as a skate shop, men's clothing store, fitness and health, tax service, sporting goods, jewelry store, music and entertainment, furniture, golf, gadgets, or anything that interests men, this is your opportunity to introduce your product or service to thousands of metro area men. To participate in the Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. Many special features and attractions will be announced soon. To participate in Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. You've got to be there. The Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by Dodge. Grab life by the horns.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
Drew is out ill and did one of the worst things you can do when in trouble. Leave us a message about it. Well, we had to compare a healthy Drew message with today's sick Drew message to see if we could hear a difference. Oh, boy.
It's Drew. Just wanted to lay this down in message form, requesting a day off next Friday, as I am going to the World Series.
Wow.
Hey, Mike, it's Drew. I am sick as a dog. I feel like a truck hit me. Well, the Cubs are five outs away. I shouldn't speak so soon. But I've got a ticket to the Thursday night Cubs World Series game. This is next week. And I don't feel like you want this. There's no way I can do it. I've never felt so sick in my life. I don't know what is wrong with me. But there's no way I can come in. So anyway, just wanted to drop that in ASAP. I found out it's too soon. I hope I don't jinx the Cubs. So I'll see you.
Oh,
I feel like and I'm going to call the send my clock next. Thanks.
Drew and Mike in the morning. Back in the morning. Broadcast program. On the Riff.
Riff. 101.01.
Riff.
Rocks.
Michigan winter. Bitter cold. Snow. Sleet. Freezing rain. Black ice on the roads.
Okay, I'll bet Maui sounds really good right now, huh?
It's back.
The Motor City's favorite rip tradition.
As 101, WRIF and Budweiser present Maui Time 2K5. How would you like to jet off to Hawaii with Big Daddy Arthur P, soaking in the sunshine on the pristine beaches of Kaanapali in Maui? Then just listen for the poobah to say those three magic words.
When you hear it, be Motor City call at 33 on the rip lines.
Just like that, you could be having some serious fun in the sun, chilling on beautiful Kaanapali Beach in Maui.
Plus, listen for details on Maui Waui parties throughout the Motor City, where you can win a trip to Maui in person.
Maui Time 2K5. The Rift tradition continues. Brought to you by Budweiser. Hey, Detroit, this Bud's for you. From your home for Maui Time 2K5. 101 WRIF.
Make your request
with cool Riff gear
and schmooze with the Poobah.
It's your all-request Riff rock and ride home with Big Daddy Arthur P.
On the Motor City's one and only, home of rock and roll.
101 WRIF.
Riff.
Tuesday on the Riff.
Every Tuesday, 101 WRIF,
the home of rock and roll,
brings you Tuber Tuesday. Keep it locked on the Riff all day this Tuesday for back-to-back badass blasts of your favorite Riff rock bands.
Plus, the Riff gives you the hottest tickets to the coolest concerts and events happening around the Motor City.
Tuber Tuesday.
Double the Riff rock.
Double the Riff prizes.
Learn it. Know it. Live it.
Tuber Tuesday on the Riff. From 101 WRIF.
If it rocks.
If it really rocks.
Now, begin transmission.
Here comes the music.
It's the Riff.
It's your fix of the heaviest 60 minutes in the Motor City. It's Midnight Metal.
Is America a better place to live because of our efforts?
Tuesday through Thursday nights with Screaming Scott.
From your home for Midnight Metal, the home of rock and roll.
101 WRIF.
The Riff.
$1 billion more. It's on top of projected $855 billion in deficits for the next decade. So that's almost $1 trillion plus trillions more for this Social Security plan. We are in the grasp of insane people. I mean, could these people really be sane? I mean, it doesn't seem it. Gary in Windsor writes to calltalkyes@yahoo.com, while the news media is celebrating the Iraqi election, we shouldn't forget that the war is based on lies. The election was heavily flawed. The election took place while Iraq is occupied by a foreign army. True. The vote is only set up to return a National Assembly, which will have very little power to do anything. I don't know about that one way or the other. But the occupying army will still be there. International observers were not even in the country. They were so at danger they had to be in Jordan. Let's see this election for what it is, a convenient diversion for the from the wealthy men who created this mess to begin with. Okay, let's go back to our phones here. And all right, I have found it. It is Jason from Ypsilanti Township. Jason, hi, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Hi, Pete.
Hi.
Great show.
Thank you.
You're really helping us out. What I'd like to say is you were talking about the economy earlier.
Right.
And I think one thing a lot of people don't understand is that the wealthy do not have the same interests that we do, as far as they're not just making money. I mean, in a way, it's greed, but it's not so they can buy another mansion. It's so they can maintain control over the institutions of our economy.
Right.
They all sort of compete and collaborate for different varying elements of control over the banking system, the industrial system. And now that's changed in the last 20 or 30 years into competing for it globally. And so, where we used to be somewhat important to them because we were, you know, holding up the pyramid, so to speak, most of us don't really, you know, don't really have a lot of importance to them anymore. You know, it's easy for them to forget that because they're roaming all over the globe. And
well, that's exactly it. The loyalty. I mean, see, we're expected to have this absolute patriotism, whereas the rulers have very, very little. It's just convenient rhetoric for the rubes.
Yeah, and I think I just want to say something specific about, like, for one thing, just a couple of quick points. Free trade doesn't work in this world. Free trade was developed 200 years ago by a man named David Ricardo, who was a British imperial economist. And this was an age when most capital, most money, was land. It could not be moved around. So comparative advantage was based on the fact that capital or wealth could not be moved across borders for the most part, and that's what gave each country a specific advantage. In an age when money can move around instantly, all you have is absolute advantage for the most part. In absolute advantage, you have winners and losers. You don't have win-win for the most part.
Sure.
And so that's what we're seeing. And even worse, in a world that has fiat money like we do, we're just living on, we're printing all our future paychecks and spending them today, which is what our government is doing. And it's diluting even the value of today now. I mean, if you have an analogy, if you have a pitcher of Kool-Aid and you drink half of it, you don't have any more Kool-Aid mix, and you add water instead, well, the Kool-Aid doesn't taste so good. Well, if you do it over and over again, not much Kool-Aid to go around anymore. And that's what we're doing to our money. It's becoming paper thin and worthless, and it's gonna be a real shock when the world no longer accepts our currency as a reserve, and we have to really pay the real cost of oil.
Yeah, and sometimes I think when during conversations like this, there's a lot of people going, huh, what, huh? But it ultimately is the core of what we're going to face unless we address this problem directly. It's like I don't know, like some drunks that have just been given large amount of money, and they're just going to go buy it all on booze, and then mom and the kids are going to wind up not being able to pay the rent.
Yeah, well, what we're doing, I'll just say this fact, that we're playing an international game of chicken with China and Iran and the European Union and everybody, really, saying, daring them to cause a calamity because it's going to affect everyone.
Yeah, so that's right. So we're going to keep forcing them to prop up the American economy artificially. And so at some point when the realization is in that the emperor has no clothes, hey, I'll use all these analogies. They'll pull the rug out from under us.
Yeah, exactly, and that's not going to be a good day.
No, it's not. All right, thank you for joining us. I appreciate your call. Now, here is what Bird Boy writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. He says the lines are jammed, so he's emailing me. Do you have any comments on the idea that the whole so-called war on terror and plans for invading, transforming the Middle East is really about an upcoming war with China? After all, China has 1 billion people, plenty of military hardware, most importantly, plenty of nukes and an ever-growing need for increasing scarce oil. This would seem to put China on a collision course with the U.S. Is this what the desired takeover of the Middle East is all about? Well, it's about control of oil resources. Yes, indeed. This could account for the recent prolific acceleration of Bush's transfer of wealth to fewer and fewer hands, knowing that the U.S. as we know it today will not exist in the same fashion once the war with China begins. Well, it doesn't even have to be exactly a war. I mean, empires competing, as we've seen throughout history, and as short a time ago as World War II, has a way of settling the great issues of who controls what and where by force of arms. Have we learned nothing? Speaking of learning nothing, the Reverend H. Helix writes, here's a letter that's not going to get read, to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Actually, he even wrote to the wrong address. He says, hi there, it's me again. It's been a few years since I last wrote you, and I hope you don't mumble through half of my email this time. See you later, Reverend. All right, let's continue on. Mark in Plymouth, Michigan. Mark, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Yeah, I was wondering, it's kind of ironic, actually, what you thought about the recent Supreme Court rulings, because we seem to be losing our civil rights as we try to give other people some civil rights.
Which ones are you thinking of?
The one with the dog, not to have. Supreme Court ruled, I believe it was a Chicago case, about having absolutely no reason to bring drug sniffing dogs around your car in a normal police stop.
I missed that case. In other words, they said it was okay.
Yeah, it's just another ruling to where basically when you get in your car, you're getting rid of your civil rights when you get in your car.
Well, the drug laws, besides being absolutely ineffective in creating these repressive government bureaucracies and making millions of people who want to change their consciousness, which is no business of the government, into criminals, it's also it's an area where we've lost tons of rights.
Right, and you know, it just seems ironic that, you know, well, here we are, we're spreading democracy, but yet we seem to be going in the other direction.
Some hypocrisy here, are you?
Yeah, and the thing is that they're worried. I think the ACLU is they're up in arms about it because they're going to basically be able to take a drug dog down the street next to people's cars, and if they smell something, boom, you know, without any cause or just for a normal, say you're the traffic stop, you had a tail light, whatever.
They sure.
Can bring a police dog now over to sniff your car without any reason.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, I hadn't seen that case. This is what the Supreme Court takes up. Thanks for alerting us, Mark. I appreciate it. Thanks for joining us at 313-298-WRIF. Let's see. Joe writes in. No, I'm sorry. It's Jim from Novi. He says, I was wondering what your opinion on drugs is. Thanks a lot. I love the show. Legalize all drugs. Recognize that people that have problems with it, in the manner that people have problems with alcohol, is a matter of community health, both for individuals and for the community, and ought to be dealt with as such. Of course, I know that would destroy the prison industrial complex, would probably, get rid of about half of the clients for the prison industrial complex. But again, we were talking about what makes America number one. We're number one in total prisoners and also prisoners per percentage of the population. So again, we're not number one. We're number one in that sense, but we're a disgrace. We could end that. End the war on drugs. War on drugs? I can't even drive on drugs. Old joke, folks. You know, Philip has written me several times, and I've been a little remiss in answering him. Hi, Peter. I contacted you last week about the Proud Lake Recreation Area. That's on 96 at the Wixom exit. The Proud Lake Recreation Area is selling off their land to developers. Hey, we're broke. Let's sell it all, right? Why have any parks or recreation areas? You seemed interested. However, I have not heard from you since. I'm going to get a hold of my, I'm going to meet face-to-face with my representative and tell him to stop. If Granholm's behind this, Governor Granholm, stop her. Are you supportive about this issue? Yes. We need more green space. We don't need more destruction of wetlands and forests and what have you. He says, this is going on statewide. Other areas up for auction are the Highland Recreation, Pontiac Recreation, and Brighton Recreation areas. This is, again, I mean, this is why the United States comes in 45th among nations in the world of who protects their environment. We're not number one. Where are we number one? Someone remind me about that. Anyways, so Philip and others have put together an important website, saveproudlake.com, saveproudlake.com. And since I go out there all the time for cross-country skiing, for canoeing, for picnicking, for hikes with my wife and dog, this is particularly galling. But that's what's going on in this country. Everything good is being destroyed. Everything bad is rising to the top. Hey, what's the old, what was the Wizard of Id? Do they still run that comic strip? They said, that, you know, the theory of the melting pot in the United States. Remember, there was supposed to be formerly that everything just kind of wound up to be the same and all our differences, ethnic differences and all that would go away. But the Wizard of Id describes the melting pot as where the scum rises to the top and those on the bottom get burned. I didn't say that. That's what the Wizard of Id said. All right, Peter Werbe here with you. Call TalkYes at Yahoo.com. 313-298-WRIF. PeterWerbe.com, my website, PeterWerbe.com. Or if you want to be in a chat room while this is going on, go to Tom Hartman, sign up for his chat room, and you can chat about this program on his chat room. And I have his permission. All right, here's Christian Flint. Chris, thanks for joining us on WRIF.
Hi, just want to say you provide such a great service and that I'm glad you're not censored like a lot of other programs are nowadays. And the realization that, you know, they want to keep that money coming for Social Security. They got to keep spending it. They keep quit getting that revenue. They're going to have to go somewhere else. And what they're going to do is it's going to be a national sales tax is what they're going to shoot for. And we've traded our Social Security and our children's education for freedom for Iraq. And they don't want us there as bad as we don't want them here.
Yeah, yeah. And where's it going to stop? When's it going to stop? Well, I'll tell you why it doesn't stop. Because we depend on this other party. It's not even doesn't even qualify really as an opposition party, the Democrats. And what we've lost are the agencies, the mass organizations that would stand up to the plutocracy, that old word which means rule of the rich. And so, you know, unions are going down the drain. The big social movements of the past that demanded decent living standards aren't what they used to be. So, yeah, we're at the mercy. We're at the mercy of the rich rulers that have no interest or concern for us or the country or the environment or anything. And we're hoping, well, maybe Hillary Clinton will help us in 2008. What are things going to be like by then? Thank you, Chris. Appreciate your call. Let's see. It's is it BB?
Yeah.
Hi, BB from Canton, Michigan. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. Is this Peter?
It's Peter, and you're on the air. Welcome.
Okay, sorry. Thank you. I appreciate everybody giving their opinions on everything. I kind of would love to hear people call and offer suggestions to help solve some of these issues that we have in our country. And I have a couple suggestions I thought I could voice, if that's okay.
Please.
As far as the war, you know, I hear people calling in, they're upset, oh, you got to support our troops. Well, how do you support them? It's apparently just, like you said, throwing a bumper sticker on your car, supporting our troops.
Uh-huh.
And probably even that money for those magnets isn't even helping our troops. But if we could start some magnets and bumper stickers about support our troops, bring them home, end the war.
Good idea.
As far as our economy goes, we need to take some action instead of just complaining. And our generation is so lax anymore because everybody's so busy. They don't have time to get petitions for resolutions to change laws or what have you. But, you know, everybody could take anybody that's like under $100,000 in income, go on a strike. Let the rich people support the economy for a day. You know, once a month, everybody buy what they need to get. But just one day a month, anybody that's, you know, middle income, don't buy nothing. Let the rich people support us.
Well, that's the old tactic of general strike, which has worked in this country in the 30s and has worked in other countries. But
it's getting it out there through the media to get people to support it. You know, it's kind of
absolutely.
Hard,
well, you know what, BB, we as a people have always been very creative in making change in this country. And what's happening now, because you're right, we can keep complaining forever, and this is like the local complaint department, this show, and a couple of people have said you never offer any solutions. Well, it's not like,
well, it's not up to you. You can't do it alone.
There you
know?
Go there you
I
go
mean,
yeah,
you have a medium where you can get it out there more than others, but you know, everybody's got to support you. We got to start doing some. And I'm really, really sickened by the fact that these religious, moralistic people that have voted for Bush because of his moral values. Since when is lying a moral value?
Well, there you go.
And President Clinton was almost impeached over a piece of tail. Why has no one tried to impeach Bush over his lies and his deception? I don't understand these people sometimes. And then you talk about these business people, these rich people. You know, they're rich, but why aren't they smart? Because greed has taken over. Logic has no room for, or, you know, greed has no room for logic.
Well, you know what? You're right, BB, and I think I may have said this before. Here is Walmart, which is now under attack and by being criticized by a lot of people for what it does to communities and the bad wages they pay and everything like that. So they've gone on this campaign to show that they're good community citizens, but they won't do anything like pay wages consistent with the kind of profits they make. Usually what happened in the 40s and the 50s, and why so many of our families became middle class, even as auto workers, was because as productivity and hence wealth grew, General Motors and Ford and Chrysler would reward our fathers and grandfathers with more money. But now it's a drive to, it's a race to the bottom for ordinary people of the whole hemisphere, including here. And the idea is, how much can we gouge out of everyone in terms of prices, in terms of low wages? And you would think, like Walmart, if they really wanted to be loved, I've used this example before. I think Sam Walton had four kids, so they are like the fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth richest people in the world. The combined wealth is more than the family wealth is combined wealth more than anyone else that's on the richest person list. They could pay everybody $25 an hour that works at Walmart, and that would be reasonable given the kind of profits they're making. They could shoot everyone from the working poor at their company to the middle class and give them the best benefits and what have you. It's not like they're going to sell their company. They don't got to keep the wage structure, you know, low, so if they sell it off, a new buyer won't be put off by high wages. And if these Waltons paid those extraordinary sums to the American workers working in their stores, they would still be the fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth richest people in the world. Paying people what, you know, for standing in their stupid stores all day, a decent middle class wages wouldn't take really ultimately a penny from them. But,
well, you know, a lot of those workers, they need to form a union, and you know, they don't want to do that.
Well, no. If they ever want to. I mean, talking about unions in Walmart's, in a Walmart store, you might as well head for the door yourself, because you're going to be out in the cold real quickly. They have fought viciously with them, and all companies do. They when workers try to organize, at least 50% of workers in the United States want to belong to unions, and they're. I mean, I can't understand why it's not 100% of people that are working for wages, but that companies operate in such a manner is to not allow them. They say, "Oh, it destroys our family." What do they call it? The culture. That's right. They'll say it'll destroy the Walmart culture. Yeah, bad wages where you get told what the hell to do. I mean, that's what the culture is. You gone? Okay. Let me see. I got to hang that one up, don't I? All right, let's see what's what here. What time is it? All right, we got time for another call or two. Going out to Ann Arbor, it's Brian. Brian, it's Peter Werby. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF.
Hi, I wanted to ask you about your comment about legalizing all drugs. Why do you think that's a good idea?
Well, it's the opposite. The attempt to stop people over the years has never been successful. In fact, it's always, as I said, led to the worst activities on the part of government. The people use drugs in countries where they execute drug users, like in Iran or China or places like that. I mean, people really want to change their consciousness. Not everybody. I mean, most of us that do drink some. I mean, when I'm drinking, wine or beer, and I just feel a little buzz come over me, I don't say, "Oh, this is terrible. I can't let this happen to me." I go, "Yeah, that's a nice feeling." And suddenly the level of conversation increases. We laugh more and what have you. Other people want a deeper intoxicant, for whatever the reasons are. Enjoyment, escape, philosophical, internal investigation. But the government has no right to tell me what I can put in my system.
Well, I think the government may have to do that because I don't think that the use of drugs is necessarily limited when you say get into a vehicle and run somebody over.
No. Come on. You can't. No sensible society lets people do anything that would endanger themselves or other people while intoxicated. I mean, do you think I said get rid of drunk driving laws?
No. I didn't say that.
No, I know, but obviously you don't want the airline pilot or the bus driver buzzed on weed or crack, right? But if someone wants to use crack, I mean, if someone said to me, "Do you think I should use crack?" I'd say, "It sounds like a pretty dumb drug," or meth, "It seems like a pretty dumb drug." On the other hand, there's other drugs that and other intoxicating substances, including booze, that have an effect on people that people like. And it's just a product of these puritanical strain in American society. There wasn't any heroin problem when they outlawed heroin. There wasn't any marijuana problem when they got rid of it. It was the same kind of narrow-minded busybodies, people with no business of their own, that butted into the lives of other people that wanted to do something different than these repressive creeps.
Well, when they outlawed those, they had less motor vehicles. But anyway, but I think that if you were to legalize everything, you would get more people putting themselves in situations where they endanger other people.
Well, they might. On the other hand, the situation where we've had tens of millions of people being made into criminals because of these laws, simply because they, as I say, they want to alter their consciousness. Like, look at ecstasy, for instance. Here's a drug that makes people love one another. Maybe that their inhibitions drop. That's the deal. They want to love one another and dance all night. So what do? Call the police. Put a gun to their head. Throw them in jail.
Well, ecstasy also is lethal, and I actually had a friend that died of ecstasy overdose. So.
Well, people have to have some responsibility for themselves. I've had friends die from drug complications and their addiction. I've had people die of alcoholism. And when we come to, I mean, the old argument is that the big problem of intoxicants in this society certainly isn't marijuana, which no one has ever died from, but even more drugs that take some if they were going to be used, would have to be done with great administrative skills like heroin or crack or meth or something like that. What people need to know are the consequences, and then it's up to them. I mean, if it ain't no business of the government to tell me how to run my internal body, including my mind.
Well, I don't think most individuals, normal individuals, are clued in enough or have the knowledge to appropriately administer opioids or these kind of complex drugs.
Well, I guess I got more confidence in people than you do. How about alcohol? Doesn't look, from what we see, I mean, on any Saturday night, there's probably 20 million people driving illegally in terms of what you and I are both concerned about.
I understand that. I mean, I could make an argument to where all alcohol should be banned, but that we can't do that now because alcohol is already here. But
well,
I'm just saying,
I got to tell you, drugs are here.
We get even more. I'm not trying to talk over you.
I'm sorry, I was talking over you.
I'm sorry, but I'm just saying that if we included more mind-altering drugs, there would just be another proportion of drivers on the road on a Saturday night that are either stoned with heroin or marijuana or all these other things. So it would increase, as an aggregate, an accumulate of more people would be impaired on the road. That's all I'm saying.
Well, it may or may not be the case. Even if it is, there certainly the social consequences, both in terms of cost and human suffering, and as one caller was saying earlier, loss of civil liberties because of the so-called drug war, I think are even worse. But I got to move on. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Appreciate it. Bye now. Can I take the Raf Dizzy, who's on the phones right now? Can I take the... Yes. Okay. Good. He's been waiting a long time. Here's Mike down in Toledo. Mike, it's Peter Werby. Thanks for joining me.
Peter, how are you?
I'm doing good.
Good. Listen, first-time caller.
Welcome.
Listen, thank you. Listen to the show for a couple years now. This is the first time I've actually decided to call in. I think you are a reasonably bright man, but I could not disagree with you more on your politics. You know, I think today, I don't know if you've talked about this much, I heard kind of some snippets earlier about the show. You were talking about how people say America's number one and how much they love their country and how you kind of have problems with that, but you know, I don't want to get too off on tangents, but today, for example, I think is a great day in international relations, the democracy of the planet, with the Iraqi elections. I think it is a wonderful day.
Well, let's see. Let me see what the date is today. Today is the 31st, right?
That's correct.
January 31st. All right. One of the things that I always advise people not to do is to rush to judgment. So we don't know what is going to be the result of this.
That's true.
Okay. So I suspect nothing particularly good is going to come of it. An election to some extent, as someone said, with an occupying power in the manner that this has been held, may or may not bode well. I mean, certainly the Shiites voted in great numbers because they're interested in establishing a government that is run by their section, their ethnic section of the population. What that's going to do to the rest of the folks, I'm sure that, you know, there's the Kurds are demanding either the presidency or the prime ministership. What this is going to do to the insurgency, I have no idea. I mean, I know that Bush wanted it for his political purposes and couldn't care less about democracy. Why then would he be so, his whole family be so tight with the Saudis, for instance?
Right, but let me ask you this.
Go right ahead.
Why are you so pessimistic even from the beginning? You don't know what's going to happen, but you even said, well, I suspect something wrong is going to happen, something bad is going to come out of this.
Well, it's kind
of you're kind of already in a negative view, which in my opinion, if you watch the news,
mm-hmm.
any kind of news channel, now again, could be biased from any kind of arena, any medium that you look at, but from what I see women voting that we have never seen in that country.
Well, I'll tell you, women, if you read mostly about the state of women in that country, it has been reduced since the destruction of the Saddam regime. That mainly because Saddam was a secularist that allowed, to some extent, the religious groups to exist. But women were well integrated, in fact, maybe the most so in the Middle East of the Arab countries. Now, what's occurring is, as you notice, many of them have the, I don't know what they call it in that country, but the veil, the chador, or whatever. So women's position has, and also, what do they call those, revenge killings, all of this has increased. Most observers say that women's position since the U.S. invasion has eroded.
Has eroded?
Yeah.
Who says this?
Well,
because from what I see, my perspective is that before the United States walked in, or however you want to say it, into Iraq on March 17, 2003, by all accounts, now according to, you know, you could believe who you want to believe, but you can believe the Iraqi disinformation machine saying that, oh, no, you know, women were treated fine. And now, look, I understand that in the Muslim religion, there are certain, you know, perspectives within their culture that have to be obeyed. And there are, you know, hierarchies there with men dominating women. And, you know, that's their culture. But when you talk about women not having rights, and not just women, you know, I mean, we're talking about a whole bunch of different things here, about people actually being able to vote.
Well, let's stick with women. Women were well integrated into the economic structure of pre-invasion Iraq. Since then, they've been driven out of the workplace. They've been driven out of school. Same thing has happened. That's getting too far afield. During the break, which is coming right up, I will see if I can get some information on the internet.
I guess I just couldn't disagree more with your idea, especially about the way. I don't know how we just got, you know, on the women tangent. You know, I brought it up, but. The main thing is that, as far as I can see, women weren't even allowed to pick up a book.
You got the wrong country. That's not true.
In Iraq?
Yeah.
Women
yeah.
were allowed to read.
Well, of course. That's what happens in these religious fundamentalist countries like our ally, Saudi Arabia. It wasn't true in Iraq. I will look during the break. Thank you. Appreciate your call. Got to take this right now.
This is the Riff award-winning night call.
Tired of low-price LASIK ads that promise a great price only to find that it quadruples when you actually go there? Well, you'll never have that experience with Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. At the Lake Laser Eye Center, there are no gimmicks and no games. Only $9.99 an eye or as low as $33 per month per eye. You know your costs up front with no hidden charges. You receive top personalized service and see Dr. Combati himself at each visit. The Lake Laser Eye Center is not an assembly line designed to get people in and out as quickly as possible. They are committed to you and offer the highest standards of eye care using the state-of-the-art Visix S4 laser with active eye tracking. One visit to Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center and you'll understand why he's one of the most respected and accurate eye surgeons in Michigan. You owe it to yourself to receive the best care for the best price. Appointments are going fast. Call Lake Laser Eye Center today at 1-877-UC-MORE. That's 1-877-UC-MORE. Again, 1-877, the letter U, S-E-E-M-O-R-E, or visit UCMORE.com. These are your eyes, and this is the care you deserve. You've searched today, like every other day, for those annoying reading glasses. It's gotten to the point where you just can't see the newspaper without them. Well, now you don't have to search for your glasses anymore due to a new procedure from Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center called Near Vision CK. Near Vision CK is a safe, simple, 5-minute procedure that's usually done on one eye and for just $9.99 or as low as $33 a month. This exciting procedure will finally eliminate your need for reading glasses. Call Dr. Combati today at the Lake Laser Eye Center, 1-877-UC-MORE, to set up your free consultation. You'll see Dr. Combati himself, and he'll take the time to answer all of your questions and thoroughly explain the Near Vision CK procedure. That number again is 1-877, the letter U, S-E-E-M-O-R-E, or you can visit the website, www.useemore.com, for Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. And get ready to throw those reading glasses away.
There are so many choices in mortgages these days. For the first-time homebuyer and even for experienced homeowners looking simply to refinance, searching for a mortgage can be a frustrating and confusing time. Why not let Financial Independence Mortgage make your financing search easier? Financial Independence Mortgage provides you with all the relevant information about mortgages and will find you the perfect mortgage to fit your personal needs. It's as simple as filling out a one-page application, and Financial Independence won't make you wait long for your approval. Typically, you'll get a response within 24 hours. Get a free quote from all of the top lending institutions so you know you have a fair comparison of what's available to you on the market. You simply can't find a better, more thorough, more personalized way to ensure yourself of getting the best mortgage at the best rate possible. Competitive rates, very fast closing times, and Financial Independence Mortgage can handle exactly the type of mortgage to fit your personal needs, whether or not you have some blemishes on your credit. Find out today the difference Financial Independence Mortgage can make for you at 248-594-7582. That's Financial Independence Mortgage at 248-594-7582.
It's coming to the Novi Expo Center on Saturday, April 2nd. It's the 4th Annual Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by your Detroit Dodge dealers. If you own a company or retail shop, such as a skate shop, men's clothing store, fitness and health, tax service, sporting goods, jewelry store, music and entertainment, furniture, golf, gadgets, or anything that interests men, this is your opportunity to introduce your product or service to thousands of metro area men. To participate in the Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. Many special features and attractions will be announced soon. To participate in Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. You've got to be there. The Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by Dodge. Grab life by the horns.
Michigan winter. Bitter cold. Snow. Sleet. Freezing rain. Black ice on the roads.
Okay, I'll bet Maui sounds really good right now, huh?
It's back.
The Motor City's favorite rip tradition.
As 101, WRIF and Budweiser present Maui Time 2K5.
How would you like to jet off to Hawaii with Big Daddy Arthur P, soaking in the sunshine on the pristine beaches of Kaanapali in Maui? Then just listen for the poobah to say those three magic words.
When you hear it, be Motor City Code 33 on the rip lines.
Just like that, you could be having some serious fun in the sun, chilling on beautiful Kaanapali Beach in Maui.
Plus, listen for details on Maui Waui parties throughout the Motor City, where you can win a trip to Maui in person.
Maui Time 2K5.
The Rift tradition continues.
Brought to you by Budweiser. Hey, Detroit, this bud's for you.
From your home for Maui Time 2K5. 101 WRIF.
Your chance to take control of the WRIF playlist.
With the guy who lost control of a long time ago.
The Riff's All Request Rip and Rock at 9 o'clock. With Meltdown, the big unit.
Weekday nights at 9.
On 101 WRIF.
Detroit's Rock Station.
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 Hello, how are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We relived an unfortunate encounter we had with Santa Claus from a few years back when we learned he wasn't wearing the required Santa outfit in its entirety. It was disgusting.
Do you wear the big black belt?
I have a big black belt, yes.
Okay, all right. Well,
and
you're
I don't
just
wear it continuously.
But when you're going to schools and stuff, surely you've got the black belt on and everything, right?
It's not really necessary. They recognize me.
Oh, man, what do you show up in jeans or something? I mean,
Santa, you can't be in civilian clothes when you're Santa Claus.
I can't?
No, you can't.
Just waltz in there with a T-shirt, with a pack of Marlboros in the pocket, and some jeans, boots.
I don't do that.
No? No.
I try to answer all the letters. I usually enclose a picture.
Uh-huh.
Santa Claus.
With the hat on?
Knows me. I think one or two of them has a hat on.
All right.
I'm not sure your dipstick's touching all, but
he sends them in the nude.
Yeah, maybe I'm a couple bricks short of a load, Santa.
Yeah, your elevator don't go to the top.
Yeah, that's my kind of Santa. Just rips people.
Stick your Christmas off your ass. How, how.
Stop it!
Drew and Mike in the morning. Broadcast program.
On the Riff. Riff.
101-101.
W-R-I-F.
Riff.
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 Rocks.
presents this Detroit Lions Super Bowl moment.
Thank you.
This Detroit Lions Super Bowl moment has been brought to you by 101 WRIF. This station rocks.
All day Thursday, your walk right in free station, 101 The Rick, unleashes a Ticket Blitz Thursday. Keep your radio locked on 101 WRIF all day this Thursday
for your chance to hook up with tickets to all of the hottest concerts and events happening around the Motor City.
Hooking you up like no other Detroit station can.
Listen for your chance to win.
Then call the Rip Request line at 313-298-WRIF.
Don't forget.
You can always improve your chances to win by joining the Rip Cyber Crew today and score your totally unfair internet advantage.
Just log on to WRIF.com.
It's Ticket Blitz Thursday on the Rip. All day Thursday from your walk right in free station. 101 The Rip.
Family didn't even have food to eat and stuff like that, so he took off to Iraq to be a driver, be one of those contractor drivers with the KBR, Kellogg Brown and Root.
Right.
Send him over there. I guess they got shot at every day, attacked. This man basically had a total nervous breakdown, some other serious health problems. He was planning on, like, getting enough money to, you know, have enough food for his family, health care, and bring something back.
Now, you know, 250 contractors have been killed over there.
Right. So he started, you know, thinking about it and then decided to come back 3 or 4 months into his contract. And he came back and kind of he talked about his experiences. And basically his family is 2 minutes from being homeless out on the street. And the only counseling that KBR would offer was somewhere in the facility in Texas. And this family doesn't even have the money to put enough gasoline in their car to get down there.
Yeah.
They're from some other southern state. And he talked about they had some kind of memorial or something or some kind of sign, like some kind of witty, I guess you can call it witty, but some kind of sign in one of the bases in Kuwait headed out to Iraq. But the contractors had said, we bleed and we die and nobody gives a damn kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought it was terrible, very tragic. I think that if we're talking about solutions, I think everybody needs to help each other out, families, friends, neighbors, because I don't know what else I can do. I'm powerless. I'm a nobody, and I don't have any dream of being able to influence any policy, because people who have the power to do good refuse to do good. They're caught up with the accoutrements of office, don't care about anything else. And
well,
I think it's just regular people have to help each other.
Well, I agree, Kevin, and one of the things that we haven't been able to achieve, I mean, I have a unique opportunity with this show, because other than that, I'd be no different than you or my next-door neighbor. Most of us don't get to speak our mind in a public way. But as I was saying earlier, throughout American history, and beginning with American history, it was people coming together to assert power over the rulers. And it often was an extraordinarily long struggle, and sometimes it was force of arms in the Revolutionary War and the Civil War, for instance, during the 1930s, just to be able to form unions, cops and National Guard and private guards killed 300 American workers that were trying to unionize during that decade. So, well, I'm not suggesting that is the way we have to change things or the way we have to suffer, but at a minimum, we have to start coming together. And the thing, well, how do we come together? Where is the organization? Where is the next meeting? Well, there's small ones out there. I mean, they're small because not many people attend, but it's almost like something happens in the history of a people. There's a famous book about the civil rights movement that, well, or even going back a few years from when this occurred, when Rosa Parks, the woman who sparked the Montgomery bus boycott, just one day, she just said, you know, I'm not getting to the back of the bus. I'm not giving up my seat for somebody. I worked hard all day. Why didn't that happen weeks before or years before? You can't tell. But another book about the civil rights movement is called They Should Have Served That Cup of Coffee. And that was to the young, courageous black students in North Carolina who in 1960 went to a white counter and asked for a cup of coffee, and they weren't served. Well, the refusal to do that ignited this enormous movement that completely altered the nature of this country, and it's still, the logic of it still hasn't been completed. So when's that going to occur? I mean, when are we going to have had too much of war? When are we going to have too much of pollution? When are we going to have too much of the domination of the by the wealthy and the corporations? I don't know. I mean, I don't know. It looks like it's going the other way. It looks like you know, the big guys are winning. But we've got a good history. I mean, the people of the United States standing up to power, and I think it's going to happen.
The last thing I just want to throw in real quick is the peak years for having general strikes and getting wage increases and getting better conditions to work was actually during World War II.
Right.
Far more than the 30s. And it's kind of glossed over because we have this happy Disneyfied image of 1940, the Rosie the Riveter and all that kind of stuff, which
right.
is really great. Sacrifices were, immense sacrifices were made, and I'm not watering them down. I'm just saying that the peak people's action was during the 40s. So.
Well, that's, so. I don't know, what is that, 60 years or so? I guess we should, you know, it's time for another, I guess. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Let me see here. I got another. The Big Swede in Boynton Beach, Florida, has written in. And this is a site about the history of women in Iraq. I don't know whether that's going to speak. This is same thing. Compared to women in neighboring Middle Eastern country, women in Iraq have many rights and abilities. They have equal pay and the opportunity to work. They're able to drive legally. They can uncover their heads, and they are able allowed to serve in the army. Still, women in Iraq suffer from honor killings, human rights violations, torture and execution, and political repression, and their rights are slowly deteriorating. Yeah. You can go, let me see, what is this? Womensissue.about.com. Womensissue.about.com, and then you got to find the Iraq section. All right, let me see, let me plunk my little magic wand here. It is Paul in Plymouth. Paul, hi. It's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter. This is Paul from Plymouth.
Hi.
Hey, I just want to take this opportunity to inform your listeners a little more about Social Security.
Sure.
And just why it's failing, what they're not being told. Since the advent of Social Security many, many years ago, our great-grandparents and grandparents and our parents, our baby boomers now, have been just dumping tons of money into the system. And over the past 40 years, suddenly our senators and congressmen decided that they saw so much money in this big stash of cash that they would borrow against it to keep the government running. So what they've done over the past 40 years now is borrowed money from Social Security and borrowed and borrowed and borrowed and never, ever paid it back. And now, unlike any of us who take a loan out and have to pay it back or have some sort of penalty, they don't. So they just keep dipping into these funds until ultimately in 20 or 30 years from now, it will simply run out.
No, it's not going to run out. I mean, there's no one, I mean, unless other than Bush says it's going to run out. I mean, in about 30 or 40 years, there's going to be not the ability to pay the full amount unless something has changed. I mean, there's no immediate crisis. And also, when the United States government owes money to the Social Security Trust Fund, that's no different than the kind of indebtedness that it has either to foreign lenders or to people holding savings bond. In other words, if the government is, if there's a consideration that the government would default on what it owes to the trust fund, man, we are in dreadful trouble.
Well, we already have defaulted several times. We don't have a balanced budget right now.
Yeah.
Now, now we have this idea of putting money from our Social Security into Wall Street, which I think is the biggest mistake, because we're simply going to prop up a market that is in recession right now, and I don't care whether they say it's coming back or not. We're going to be the only generation that's made less than our parents, for the most of us anyway, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's not going to be as much money being put in the system, Social Security, as, say, our parents did, working for, say, Ford or GM or Chrysler or whoever that's making $25 or $30 an hour. If we're all going to be making less wages per hour, we're going to be putting less money into the system. So ultimately, down the road, we're going to have this insolvent system.
I don't know if it's going to be insolvent. I mean, everything that I read, even from the Congressional Budget Office, says that it's going to need an influx of cash. I mean, you can't make permanent these tax breaks for the ultra wealthy who don't need it and decrease the amount of money going into the government at the same time spending hundreds of billions of dollars on war. I mean, you could fix it, for instance, simply by repealing all these tax breaks that were given to the rich. You could do it by taking the cap off of payroll taxes, so that stops now at about $90,000, and have it have it pay payroll tax up to the people that are making millions. That would fix it overnight.
You're absolutely right. I was just going to bring that up, is that do most people know that it stops at a certain income level, you don't have to pay any more Social Security. So a person making several million dollars doesn't have to pay the full Social Security amount that they should pay.
Right.
And I wish they would.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Thank you for joining us. Let's see here. We got a little note from, let's see, Scott from Westland says, one of, well, yeah, that's right, one of Iraq's leading war criminals and top scientists of biological warfare was a woman. Iraq and Saddam had many women of education in a top position. So, yes, that's not the kind of work we like to see him doing, but the position of women in the Saddam government and Iraqi society, a secular society, one of the few in the Middle East, was actually at the top of women in that region. Here's Dane from Farmington Hills. Hi, Dane. It's Peter Werby.
How you doing? It's a first-time caller.
Welcome.
Yeah, I just randomly, when I drive home to my girlfriend's house tonight, I come listen to your program. And I don't know, I just wanted to know, how Christian President Bush could be if, he knows that he's killing millions, like now us, because, Americans were getting screwed out of our money, the whole Social Security thing I was just listening to, and then, the people that they're killing over another country,
I thought he was pro-life.
Yeah, he was. How pro-life can you be when, you're shipping off, people's kids to just get shot by, whoever's over there shooting us,
Right. Well, I mean, think about it. We're now in this orgy that the media, of course, we only think what's important is what the media shows us. The media compliantly shows this wonderful exercise in democracy. And all it's cost us, and then it appears as this pure altruism. We're only doing it for them. We've spent a couple $100 billion, going to spend tens of billions of dollars more as we don't have enough to keep the state, the city, local school systems, police forces out of either cutbacks or even bankruptcy in some cases. We've already lost we've had 12,000 casualties. Well, we must be the nicest people in the world to do that for the Iraqis, to give up what could be used here to have our young men and women and some not young men and women lose their lives and get horrible wounds, all so people could vote. I mean, mm-hmm. Come on.
Yeah, I'm 17 and I'm feeling the backdraft of the high school. I don't have enough money in my school for textbooks and paper and all sorts of stuff. We're pulling kids in from Detroit because I'm right on the Livonia, Redford, Detroit area. So we just we recruit kids from over there just so when it's time to count how many kids we have enough to make money to have money for the next year.
Wow, that's incredible.
It's totally sucks.
All right, Dane, thank you very much. I got to move on quickly because we're almost out of time here. Let's see, it's Al from Inkster. Al, hi. Welcome to the broadcast.
How are you doing tonight?
Doing good, thanks.
Your earlier caller about Walmart. The Walmart is so anti-union that they actually voted in a union down in Florida for the meat cutters. And within 2 months, every meat cutter employed by Walmart had been laid off, and they went to prepackaged or bulk-cut meat.
Huh.
That's how anti-union they are.
And how cold they are.
Out the door you go.
That's right. That's right.
Barbara Ehrenreich, in her book Nickel and Dimed.
Excellent book, yeah.
She worked for a Walmart, and, the mention of the word union was strictly forbidden.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've worked, not in a long time, but worked in places, more when I was in my early 20s. They would ask, do you belong to a union? Does anyone in your family belong to a union? And they've always got some story about why they don't want unions. None of it makes any sense. Main thing is they want to keep people working at low wages. All right, thank you very much. We are out of time. My apologies to everyone left on hold. We'll do it again next week. Remember, you can email me during the week at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Visit my website, peterwerbe.com, P-E-T-E-R-W-E-R-B-E, and stay tuned for a couple of interesting interviews.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werbe.
There are so many choices in mortgages these days. For the first-time homebuyer and even for experienced homeowners looking simply to refinance, searching for a mortgage can be a frustrating and confusing time. Why not let Financial Independence Mortgage make your financing search easier? Financial Independence Mortgage provides you with all the relevant information about mortgages and will find you the perfect mortgage to fit your personal needs. It's as simple as filling out a one-page application, and Financial Independence won't make you wait long for your approval. Typically, you'll get a response within 24 hours. Get a free quote from all of the top lending institutions so you know you have a fair comparison of what's available to you on the market. You simply can't find a better, more thorough, more personalized way to ensure yourself of getting the best mortgage at the best rate possible. Competitive rates, very fast closing times, and Financial Independence Mortgage can handle exactly the type of mortgage to fit your personal needs, whether or not you have some blemishes on your credit. Find out today the difference Financial Independence Mortgage can make for you at 248-594-7582. That's Financial Independence Mortgage at 248-594-7582.
Tired of low-price LASIK ads that promise a great price only to find that it quadruples when you actually go there? Well, you'll never have that experience with Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. At the Lake Laser Eye Center, there are no gimmicks and no games. Only $9.99 an eye or as low as $33 per month per eye. You know your costs up front with no hidden charges. You receive top personalized service and see Dr. Combati himself at each visit. The Lake Laser Eye Center is not an assembly line designed to get people in and out as quickly as possible. They're committed to you and offer the highest standards of eye care using the state-of-the-art Visix S4 laser with active eye tracking. One visit to Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center and you'll understand why he's one of the most respected and accurate eye surgeons in Michigan. You owe it to yourself to receive the best care for the best price. Appointments are going fast. Call Lake Laser Eye Center today at 1-877-UC-MORE. That's 1-877-UC-MORE. Again, 1-877, the letter U, S-E-E-M-O-R-E. Or visit UCMORE.com. These are your eyes, and this is the care you deserve. You've searched today like every other day for those annoying reading glasses. It's gotten to the point where you just can't see the newspaper without them. Well, now you don't have to search for your glasses anymore due to a new procedure from Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center called Near Vision CK. Near Vision CK is a safe, simple, 5-minute procedure that's usually done on one eye and for just $9.99 or as low as $33 a month. This exciting procedure will finally eliminate your need for reading glasses. Call Dr. Combati today at the Lake Laser Eye Center, 1-877-UC-MORE, to set up your free consultation. You'll see Dr. Combati himself, and he'll take the time to answer all of your questions and thoroughly explain the Near Vision CK procedure. That number again is 1-877, the letter U, S-E-E-M-O-R-E, or you can visit the website, www.useemore.com, for Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. And get ready to throw those reading glasses away.
It's coming to the Novi Expo Center on Saturday, April 2nd. It's the 4th annual Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by your Detroit Dodge dealers. If you own a company or retail shop, such as a skate shop, men's clothing store, fitness and health, tax service, sporting goods, jewelry store, music and entertainment, furniture, golf, gadgets, or anything that interests men, this is your opportunity to introduce your product or service to thousands of metro area men. To participate in the Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. Many special features and attractions will be announced soon. To participate in Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. You've got to be there. The Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by Dodge. Grab life by the horns.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
Drew is out ill and did one of the worst things you can do when in trouble. Leave us a message about it. Well, we had to compare a healthy Drew message with today's sick Drew message to see if we could hear a difference. Oh, boy.
It's Drew. Just wanted to lay this down in message form. Requesting a day off next Friday.
as I am going to the World Series. Wow. Hey, Mike, it's true. I am sick as a dog. I feel like a truck hit me. Well, the Cubs are five outs away. I shouldn't speak so soon. But I've got a ticket to the Thursday night Cubs World Series game. This is next week. And I don't feel like you want this. There's no way I can do it. I swear to God, I have never felt so sick in my life. I don't know what is wrong with me. But there's no way I can come in. So anyway, just wanted to drop that in ASAP. Shout out too soon. I hope I don't jinx the Cubs. So I'll see you.
Oh,
I feel like shit. I'm going to call to send my truck next. Thanks.
Drew and Mike in the morning. Broadcast
on the Riff. 101.1.
Michigan winter. Bitter cold. Snow. Sleet. Freezing rain. Black ice on the roads.
Okay, I'll bet Maui sounds really good right now, huh?
It's back.
The Motor City's favorite rip tradition.
As 101, WRIF and Budweiser present Maui Time 2K5. How would you like to jet off to Hawaii with Big Daddy Arthur P, soaking in the sunshine on the pristine beaches of Kahanapali in Maui? Then just listen for the poobah to say those three magic words.
When you hear it, be Motor City call at 33 on the rip lines.
Just like that, you could be having some serious fun in the sun, chilling on beautiful Kaanapali Beach in Maui.
Plus, listen for details on Maui Waui parties throughout the Motor City, where you can win a trip to Maui in person.
Oh, my God.
Maui Time 2K5. The Rift tradition continues. Brought to you by Budweiser. Hey, Detroit, this Bud's for you. From your home for Maui Time 2K5. 101 WRIF.
Make your requests.
Win cool Riff gear.
And shoes with the Dubai.
It's your all-request Riff rock and ride home with Big Daddy Arthur P.
From the Motor City's one and only, home of rock and roll.
101 WRIF.
Riff.
Rocks.
Twice. Is nice.
Do for Tuesday on the Riff. Every Tuesday, 101 WRIF,
the home of rock and roll,
brings you Tuber Tuesday. Keep it locked on the Riff all day this Tuesday for back-to-back badass blasts of your favorite Riff rock bands.
Plus, the Riff gives you the hottest tickets to the coolest concerts and events happening around the Motor City.
Tuber Tuesday.
Double the Riff rock.
Double the Riff prizes.
Learn it, know it, live it.
Tuber Tuesday on the Riff. For 101 WRIF.
If it rocks. If it really rocks.
Well, begin transmission.
Here comes the music. Your fix of the heaviest 60 minutes in the Motor City. It's Midnight Metal.
Is America a better place to live because of our efforts?
Tuesday through Thursday nights with Screaming Scott.
From your home for Midnight Metal, the home of rock and roll. 101 WRIF. The Riff.
We seem to be at a crisis point with lots of cities. Are the cities outside of the United States, I think of these enormous cities that some of us don't even know the names of in Africa and Asia, that are building up towards 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 million, are those, I mean, do we have any possibility to even intervene in a way that would stop the process of what's going on there?
Absolutely.
Really?
I'm not sure, is your question more focused on the U.S. cities and where we're at, or on the European or the Asian?
Well, I could see how we could make some, there's different forces, different social and economic forces driving what's going on in the so-called third world as opposed to North America and Europe. And maybe that's even putting the cart before the horse. Maybe we should stick with North America, because it does look like we have the wherewithal here to reverse this process of urban sprawl and the negative impact on public health. What do we look at here as an entry point into considering all of this?
Well, I think a good entry point is that what we build from here forward, we have a tremendous opportunity to fix a lot of the problems that we've created through the last 50 years of city building. We all remember, or those many of us remember, just 25 years ago or so it was when the energy crisis happened. And it was very obvious to decision makers at that time that, you know, we're building cities that were more dependent on the car, lower density environments, sprawl. We had just, I think, begun to perfect what we currently view as sprawl at that point, and we were building a lot of it. And the determination of how to reduce energy consumption was purely done through technology by making cars more efficient, as opposed to considering how to design communities so we needed cars less.
Mm-hmm.
We're in the same exact situation now, 30 years later, 25, 30 years. Since then, we have built most of what's on the ground, and we're going to do it again in the next 30 to 50 years. So I think that's the most important question at the beginning is, everybody says, well, sure, you know, if we were to change the world, it could be a better place. We just rebuild everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and the reality is that over the next 30 years, we're going to build most of what we'll have on the ground again. And a lot of the buildings do get, you know, parts of cities do get redeveloped as time goes on. And it's a cycle. But we as humans tend to view things in terms of shorter time frames, in terms of wanting results. And we bump right up against the political decision-making process, which is a very short turnaround for wanting results on the ground within a term of office, perhaps. So changing the development of cities, the land use pattern, where growth goes, you know, transportation decisions, these are all long-term decisions that need to be made with long-term benefits in mind.
Yeah, now I live in a suburb of Detroit, of which if my wife and I don't each have an automobile, one of us at some point can't go anywhere. I can virtually walk nowhere. And it's an older suburb, too. I mean, it's been around since, 60th, I think just celebrated 60th birthday or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not old in terms of, European cities. But
mm-hmm.
And we talk about that, how nice it would be to be able to walk to work, to walk to the grocery store and be able to carry things back without it being, a load. But, can we retrofit what is already laid out in an absolutely car-oriented community?
Well, in many cases we can. In many cases, no. And I think that's what we need to look at is clearly from here forward, and I think this was probably argued 30 years ago as well by some people, but with this information beyond the energy costs associated with different types of development where we have to drive everywhere, and the air pollution that goes with that, and our book addresses that in terms of respiratory effect by having, you know, more auto-dependent environments, we, of course, pollute more. We also know the health relationships in the last few years, research showing obesity associated with community design as well as physical activity that is a predictor of obesity. Now, the types of things that we can do there's a lot that we can do to change the way we build our communities from here forward. As I mentioned, we're going to be building a lot of new places. That's, you know, and I think the thesis of the argument of the book is what we build from here forward should take into account what are known as smart growth principles. Smart growth being, you know, making use of existing infrastructure where possible, but where we don't have that ability, because we're going to be building new areas. We're going to continue to grow outward. Cities always have and always will. They're always going to be consuming new land as population grows, but we can be much more efficient and not just in a not at the loss of quality of life, but actually at the gain, creating a more vital urban environment. And we can retrofit the existing communities we have.
I would say, having to drive everywhere is not pleasurable, and of course it's an enormous expense. Some people, obviously, although it has its own problems like Manhattan, most people I know that live in Manhattan don't even own cars, that they can walk everywhere. My guest is Lawrence Frank. He's co-author of Urban Sprawl and Public Health, Designing, Planning, and Building for Healthy Communities. It's published by Island Press. You can go to islandpress.org, and later on I will have this on my website at peterwerby.com. And the subtitle in here is, well, not actually in the title, Urban Sprawl and Public Health. We've been talking about a number of different issues, but you mentioned obesity, and Detroit is always battling, I forgot, either with Houston or Dallas, or which is the most obese city. I think we came in second this last year. The year before, we were number one. But you, in your book, Urban Sprawl and Public Health, Lawrence Frank, you say that obesity is legislated. We always think it's because people eat too much.
We argue that the determinants of the way cities are built are a function of regulation. Planners, people who planning professors like me train, actually, have historically over the last century or last half century developed regulations that require that uses be separated so that where we shop, where we live, where we work is all very far apart, very, very, very separate, meaning we can't walk, that we have to drive between these places. The distances are too vast. We also regulate the density, so we require in many locations very low density environments, which have a quality of life benefit. I mean, candidly, they go well with the cul-de-sacs that we build in many locations that give us the control and not having to worry about pass-through traffic, letting our kids play in the streets at the ends of the cul-de-sac. So, you know, there's trade-offs to be made, and I think we're sensitive to that. We recognize that there's a very important benefit to the ways that we've approached building communities, but what we're recognizing is that there's a lot of costs associated with it in terms of lack of physical activity by not being able to walk places, by having to drive everywhere. We're in no way opposed to the car. I realize I'm speaking to the automobile capital of the United States. And
yeah, I don't even know if we still are. We're certainly not automobile capital of the world anymore. But that's a whole other story.
Industrial restructuring and what have you. But there is absolutely a clear argument to be made, and we take a strong position that we do have to offer people choices. And what we've done a good job of is not doing that. We've overbuilt auto-dependent environments where we now realize that there is an unmet demand for additional choices so that people can choose if they want to walk or drive or take transit to different locations and not have to drive everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell us a little about low-density and high-density living. I mean, I was thinking about that. I mean, I always think of myself as a good environmentalist. Yeah, but then I'm very pleased that I have a lot, which isn't very, very large, but it's at least large enough to keep my next-door neighbors pretty far away on each side and in the back. And that's what you were indicating. That has some very attractive features in terms of privacy and low noise. And on the other hand, I think about the times in my life when I lived in apartment buildings with smelling everybody's cooking and hearing people fighting and parties on Saturday night. So talk to us about low-density communities as opposed to, is the opposite high-density?
I think this is the real question, and it's really critical for the listeners also. I mean, that's the reaction is, you know, everybody can say, well, sure, if we all lived in little cocoons in these, towers, we would take up less land, and that would be great, but the quality of life would be, you know, terrible, and that's what we have worked so hard to be able to afford a home on a piece of land, and that's, you know, our peace of mind, and gives us a quality of life that we love. So you mentioned that you have shops and services within a walkable distance to where you live.
No, the opposite.
You do not.
Yeah, okay. I have to drive everywhere.
You have to drive everywhere from where you are. But there is a place, an environment, and a lot of them, in the middle. This is not like white and black here. Where this is very clearly there's a lot of stuff in the middle. There is a level of density where you can have your own lot, where you can have shops and services nearby, sidewalks, and so forth, that allows you to walk to destinations. But still, we had this where we lived in Atlanta. It was an older neighborhood built in the 30s. Most of what we built before World War II is built like this. We're talking, you know, smaller than maybe, you know, fifth of an acre lot, a little bit smaller than that. You have a nice private yard. We had a good size yard, but we were also very, very well knit into a neighborhood with some shops and services nearby. We could walk to them. We would, you know, often meet with our neighbors on the street and talk. There was a nice sidewalk space separated from the street by a little, you know, planting strip. It's how we built our neighborhoods for centuries, basically. And the idea is, how much land do we all need, and at what trade-off does that become, you know, not viable for achieving greater public health benefits?
Now, I wonder, I'm thinking about how, I wouldn't say unsustainable, maybe that's the right word, where I live is. I mean, in other words, it's dependent upon the car. And as you said, it leads towards obesity because you're in the car all the time. I mean, in other words, for exercise, my wife and I walk miles and miles, and we still, I mean, we probably walk 3 to 4 miles a day frequently, and we still, you know, it's not enough to get us to a store. And if we even got to a store, we don't want to carry bags of groceries back, you know, on that kind of trip. But the opposite being the totally planned community, you ever see the movie The Truman Story?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, that was on location in this completely planned city. I mean, that's where they shot it. And that kind of creeps me out a little as well, that everything is set up just so. Or is that just kind of the Wild West, American Wild West mentality?
I believe it was filmed in Seaside, Florida,
right,
which is a model new urbanist community. And it has a lot of benefit to the design of the neighborhoods that you saw in the movie. But no, that's not something that can be built everywhere. Obviously, you probably didn't see any office buildings in that little beautiful little town. It's
right.
more of a, you know, residential and retail environment. I think that there's a lot that, you know, to answer your question, I think there's a lot that we can do to retrofit our neighborhoods that won't have huge negative effects on our quality of life. And I think a lot of it is just learning more about the benefits of them. And they come at a trade-off, absolutely. And it's just understanding that the benefits are much greater, at least the research that we now have available shows they're at a much greater benefit than the cost. For instance, one of the things that could really help us a lot is that we have a lot of residential environments, suburban environments, that are moderate to high density.
Mm-hmm.
Apartment buildings located near shopping centers in the suburbs, often where the backside of the shopping center is the not connected to the residential areas that might be lower density as well. So creating connections in those environments where we have mixed use, meaning we've got residential right near commercial and retail, and some of it's high-density residential built up more towards the intersections of major state routes perhaps or arterials, that those environments need to be redesigned as opposed to saying we need to redevelop the whole area and knock everything down. That's an extraordinary cost. But for a more moderate cost, we could create some sidewalks between the residential areas. Some cul-de-sacs, perhaps, could be connected up to the retail destinations so that kids and adults, children and adults, could actually walk as opposed to having to walk all the way around what is a stone's throw distance to the destinations that maybe we're trying to access.
You know, Lawrence Frank, you, in your book that you've co-authored, Urban Sprawl and Public Health, you have a lot of negatives about sprawl, everything from physical health to mental health. And at one point, I want to get into the gender differences of what occurs mm-hmm. in urban sprawl. But people seem to want to do it. I mean, I'm always amazed where they throw up these homes. And, I mean, I was out cross-country skiing a couple of days ago, and we were out alongside of this park where the only thing I ever knew was farmland, and here were these, it must have been 6,000 foot, square foot, what do they call them, McMansions.
Exactly.
And people are just building these tracts of upscale homes on what were previously cornfields. So, I mean, sometimes the charge is made is that people, and I'll include myself in this, like people like me and people like yourself, are telling other people what they don't like, where we see by their choices in the marketplace, a more conservative argument, that they, in fact, want to do what we think isn't good for them or good for the community. I don't know. That was kind of a long sprawl of a question.
That was a wonderful question, and it gets right at the heart of the matter of being prescriptive and telling others, you know, what they should do and how choices they should make. And I think that is absolutely the opposite of what we're saying. We are seeing a tremendous amount over the last 30 years of sprawl has been built. There is most of the research that I've been doing around North America and others, other colleagues of mine, shows that we've got plenty of it, meaning the supply relative to in Atlanta, for instance, where I've done most of my research, shows that, you know, the vast majority of new homes that have been built are in very auto-dependent environments in that region. There is a very small supply. If you move to Atlanta and you do not want to be in an auto-oriented environment, you're going to have a hard time finding a home. There's not a lot of it. only the in-town neighborhoods that are now very expensive because of the lack of supply. There's not a lot of that, so they've gone up a lot in value. We've seen that across North America. The neighborhoods that offer some choices where you don't have to drive everywhere have gone up in value tremendously in the last 10 years, and the census shows that. And those are the neighborhoods that are the ones that have accelerated in value the most. Well, there's reasons for that. We're not supplying it, for one thing. It's a supply and demand relationship. We've done a survey in Atlanta that I've published in a small piece of it in a journal here, and it just shows that the unmet demand, there's a significant amount, about a third of the people who live in sprawl in Atlanta would prefer to live in a more in a less auto-dependent environment. So when we say, you know, people are choosing these environments, it's what they want, that we're making, I think, a big leap between what actually people really want in their mm-hmm. preferences versus what they actually make choices of in the marketplace that is constrained by the choices that are available.
Well, I wonder if people were actually given the choice. You can drive all these distances. You got to drive everywhere. Drive your kid to school, drive to mm-hmm. shop, drive to work. Or we're going to have a nice, compacted community that has an accessible shopping, school, business area right. where you could walk to. Which would you rather choose? Well, I don't know. How many people are going to say, no, I like driving 28 miles each way?
I don't think so. You know, we've done a survey just like that in Atlanta as part of a Smart Track, which is a study that I completed a couple of years ago. And that study, you know, basically showed that, like I said, about a third of the people who make the choice with their feet to live in sprawl would prefer to have had made another choice. But given the options that they had, they optimized. We always optimize. We make good choices amongst the choices we have. And I think the argument here is that because of the lending industry, the banks and developers, more so the banks and the development regulations, meaning the regulations of zoning mm-hmm. and the codes that go with land use, have predetermined what will be built. And therefore, it's not possible or too difficult to override that and create other types of neighborhoods that are perhaps less auto-dependent at this point. Mm-hmm. So we have to change the whole building development machine. And you mentioned the McMansion. I want to touch upon that. That's
sure.
Exurbia, newly developing at the edge. We're not talking about, you know, changing the attitudes or preferences of everyone. We know that there's a group of people in the middle who perhaps make, you know, choices where we're optimizing, perhaps such as yourself, perfect example. You recognize the choices that you had available, and for the cost of the home and the location, school quality, a set of factors all added up to making that a good choice. And we recognize that there's a way to take people who, like yourself, who would like to be able to walk to destinations and to capture that market by providing better options for them that have health-promoting qualities. So you don't have to just walk for the sake of walking, which is great.
Yeah.
But you could walk to actually achieve some of your daily needs.
I'd love to do it. Well, you know, I wanted to ask you about 10 more questions. I may have time for only one. And this book is chock full of ideas, Urban Sprawl and Public Health, Designing, Planning, and Building for Healthy Communities. Have you had a chance to put any of these into practice? I mean, does it say, yes, these work here?
Yes, I think the tools that are promoted in the book come straight out of the research that's been done. We talk about, you know, intermixing uses near to where people live and where they work. We discuss creating better connections, linkages, higher levels of connectivity of the street network. It doesn't have to be a grid type, you know, small little blocks, but having direct linkages, such as I mentioned, for pedestrian access to residential or to retail mm-hmm. From where people live, is another tool that's been successfully accomplished in a number of locations.
Actually, I'm interested. Just a couple. Put some city names on it. Like,
we're talking about. I mean, most cities have examples of where we've built neighborhoods that are much more interconnected.
Sure.
Versus cul-de-sacs, and I think the question that is here is, well, we know that the residential areas that have connections to commercial or include it, all the better, through mixed use, having shops and services nearby. perform better in terms of having more physical activity. People do walk more there. What we're up against is who has actually gone in and added the sidewalks to the cul-de-sacs and done it successfully. And I think we're at the point now where some communities have started doing that. I would say it's been more successful in other countries, Australia in particular.
Mm-hmm.
Australia has just outlawed Western Australia. I was just there on a fellowship last month. They have literally outlawed disconnected cul-de-sac street networks from any future planning.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, we are unfortunately completely out of time. My guest has been Lawrence Frank. He, along with Howard Frumkin and Richard Jackson, have written a book. I know this word is overused, but the challenging book, because it really challenges how we're going to live throughout the rest of our lives and our children's lives, called Urban Sprawl and Public Health, Designing, Planning, and Building for Healthy Communities. And it's published by Island Press. You can go to islandpress.org. As I said, I will have it on my site as well. That's peterwerby.com. Lawrence Frank, thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
This is the RIS award-winning Night Call.
Tired of low-price LASIK ads that promise a great price only to find that it quadruples when you actually go there? Well, you'll never have that experience with Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. At the Lake Laser Eye Center, there are no gimmicks and no games. Only $9.99 an eye, or as low as $33 per month per eye. You know your costs up front with no hidden charges. You receive top personalized service and see Dr. Combati himself at each visit. The Lake Laser Eye Center is not an assembly line designed to get people in and out as quickly as possible. They're committed to you and offer the highest standards of eye care using the state-of-the-art Visix S4 laser with active eye tracking. One visit to Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center and you'll understand why he's one of the most respected and accurate eye surgeons in Michigan. You owe it to yourself to receive the best care for the best price. Appointments are going fast. Call Lake Laser Eye Center today at 1-877-UC-MORE. That's 1-877-UC-MORE. Again, 1-877, the letter U, S-E-E-M-O-R-E. Or visit UCMORE.com. These are your eyes, and this is the care you deserve. You've searched today, like every other day, for those annoying reading glasses. It's gotten to the point where you just can't see the newspaper without them. Well, now you don't have to search for your glasses anymore due to a new procedure from Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center called Near Vision CK. Near Vision CK is a safe, simple, 5-minute procedure that's usually done on one eye and for just $9.99 or as low as $33 a month. This exciting procedure will finally eliminate your need for reading glasses. Call Dr. Combati today at the Lake Laser Eye Center, 1-877-UC-MORE, to set up your free consultation. You'll see Dr. Combati himself, and he'll take the time to answer all of your questions and thoroughly explain the Near Vision CK procedure. That number again is 1-877, the letter U, S-E-E-M-O-R-E, or you can visit the website, www.useemore.com, for Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. And get ready to throw those reading glasses away.
There are so many choices in mortgages these days for the first-time homebuyer and even for experienced homeowners looking simply to refinance. Searching for a mortgage can be a frustrating and confusing time. Why not let Financial Independence Mortgage make your financing search easier? Financial Independence Mortgage provides you with all the relevant information about mortgages and will find you the perfect mortgage to fit your personal needs. It's as simple as filling out a one-page application, and Financial Independence won't make you wait long for your approval. Typically, you'll get a response within 24 hours. Get a free quote from all of the top lending institutions so you know you have a fair comparison of what's available to you on the market. You simply can't find a better, more thorough, more personalized way to ensure yourself of getting the best mortgage at the best rate possible. Competitive rates, very fast closing times, and Financial Independence Mortgage can handle exactly the type of mortgage to fit your personal needs, whether or not you have some blemishes on your credit. Find out today the difference Financial Independence Mortgage can make for you at 248-594-7582. That's Financial Independence Mortgage at 248-594-7582.
It's coming to the Novi Expo Center on Saturday, April 2nd. It's the 4th Annual Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by your Detroit Dodge dealers. If you own a company or retail shop, such as a skate shop, men's clothing store, fitness and health, tax service, sporting goods, jewelry store, music and entertainment, furniture, golf, gadgets, or anything that interests men, this is your opportunity to introduce your product or service to thousands of metro area men. To participate in the Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. Many special features and attractions will be announced soon. To participate in Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. You've got to be there. The Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by Dodge. Grab life by the horns.
Michigan winter. Bitter cold. Snow. Sleet. Freezing rain. Black ice on the roads.
Okay, I'll bet Maui sounds really good right now, huh?
It's back.
The Motor City's favorite rip tradition.
As 101, WRIF and Budweiser present
Maui Time 2K5.
How would you like to jet off to Hawaii with Big Daddy Arthur P, soaking in the sunshine on the pristine beaches of Kahanapali in Maui? Then just listen for the poobah to say those three magic words. When you hear it, be Motor City, call it 33 on the rip lines. Just like that, you could be having some serious fun in the sun, chilling on beautiful Kahanapali Beach in Maui. Plus, listen for details on Maui Waui parties throughout the Motor City, where you can win a trip to Maui in person.
Maui Time 2K5.
The Rift tradition continues.
Brought to you by Budweiser. Hey, Detroit, this bud's for you.
From your home for Maui Time 2K5. 101 WRIF. Chance to take control of the WRIF playlist with the guy who lost control a long time ago.
The Riffs All Request Riff and Rock at 9 o'clock with Meltdown, the big unit.
Weekday nights at 9
on 101 WRIF.
Detroit's Rock Station.
Rock Station.
Rock Station.
Rock Station.
Rock Station.
Rock Station.
Rock Station. Rock Station.
Hello.
How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We relived an unfortunate encounter we had with Santa Claus from a few years back when we learned he wasn't wearing the required Santa outfit in its entirety. It was disgusting.
Do you wear the big black belt?
I have a big black belt, yes.
Okay, all right. Well, you
don't wear it continuously.
But when you're going to schools and stuff, surely you've got the black belt on and everything, right?
Well, it's not really necessary. They recognize me.
Oh, man, what do you show up in jeans or something? I mean,
Santa, you can't be in civilian clothes when you're Santa Claus.
I can't?
No,
you can't.
Never.
Just waltz in there with a T-shirt, with a pack of Marlboros in the pocket, and some jeans,
and
boots.
I don't do that.
No? No.
I try to answer all the letters. I usually enclose a picture.
Uh-huh.
Santa Claus.
With the hat on?
Knows me. I think one or two of them has a hat on.
All right.
I'm not too sure your dipstick's touching all,
but...
He
sends them in the nude.
Yeah, maybe I'm a couple bricks short of a load, Santa.
Yeah, your elevator don't go to the top.
Yeah, that's my kind of Santa. Just rips people.
Stop it!
Drew and Mike in the morning. Back in the morning. Broadcast program.
On the Riff. Riff. 101-101.
W-R-I-F.
Riff.
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 Riff. Riff.
Rocks.
And now, the Riff presents this Detroit Lions Super Bowl moment. Thank you. This Detroit Lions Super Bowl moment has been brought to you by 101 WRIF. This station rocks. All day Thursday, your walk right in free station, 101 The Riff, unleashes a ticket blitz Thursday. Keep your radio locked on 101 WRIF all day this Thursday for your chance to hook up with tickets to all of the hottest concerts and events happening around the Motor City. Hooking you up like no other Detroit station can. Listen for your chance to win. Then call the Riff request line at 313-298-WRIF.
Don't forget.
You can always improve your chances to win by joining the Riff Cyber Crew today and score your totally unfair internet advantage. Just log on to WRIF.com. It's Ticket Blitz Thursday on the Riff. All day Thursday from your walk right in free station. 101 The Riff.
Well, it's 16, 17, 18. But I'll tell you now, you know, a 12-year-old goes on the internet and finds out how to purge, how to lose weight by purging. A 13-year-old goes on and finds out how to take over-the-counter medicines like cough medicines, cough syrups, and get high on them. There's so many temptations out there, and at the same time,
neighborhoods are fractured and parents are busy working and there aren't adults who just kind of know kids and hang out with kids and can watch kids. Now, it's you could argue that, yes, there were gangs back then, you know, in 100 years ago. But I would say that it's even tougher to be an adolescent now.
Well, I was thinking, too, without I didn't look through the book even hardly, but that most of these gangs and many of the youth gangs that we hear about today are rooted in poverty and ethnic minority groups.
Right.
But this isn't true with your book, What It Takes to Pull Me Through, in terms of the children that you are looking at or the young adults. Why don't you maybe just describe them or the four that you looked at
sure.
that got in trouble and got out?
Sure. I'll tell you about the main character, especially her name is Bianca. Now, these are true. These are real kids. These are real kids. However, I changed their names, and in one case, I changed the hometown slightly. It wasn't that somebody was living in Nome, Alaska, and I made the person move to Miami, but it was a slight change. But anyway, Bianca is a real kid, lives in West Palm Beach, Florida, and she was acting out. She was screaming at her dad. She was running away. She had a really shady boyfriend. Her grades started plummeting when she was 16. Now, this much we knew about her when she got to school, and her dad knew about her. Her mom died of cancer when Bianca was 10. However, Bianca's twin brother was thriving, doing fine all along. He was always a B+ student, and he kept on doing that. And he didn't act out against his dad. And their older sister was doing fine. But something went wrong in Bianca's life. And I realized that in a lot of ways this is like a thriller. It's like a detective book. I had to figure out what went wrong. And that just like the counselors wanted to figure out. What you find is, I won't go into details on the air, but because it's pretty graphic. But some young men had done some terrible things to Bianca. And even her twin brother didn't know. Hmm. Now, this raises a bigger question. Bianca's from a high school, public high school in the suburbs, where there's one guidance counselor for, I don't know, every 890, I forget, 900 kids. So the guidance counselor is dealing with the kids who are basically going to excel and go off to the Ivy League, or the kids who are burning down the school and really getting in trouble. But that vast swath of kids in the middle, just good old, just regular kids, you know, who are struggling with something at home, the guidance counselor doesn't even know their name, much less what they're going through.
Now, this Swift River facility mm-hmm. is what's called a therapeutic boarding school. Explain us a little just the concept. Usually I've been thinking of these kind of, what do they call them, like boot camps for
yep.
kids. Is this the same thing?
Some people call them hoods in the woods.
Huh.
No, it's very important. You ask that. This is not a boot camp. There is physical activity. There is exercise, but it's really a small component of what the kids go through. I hung out with these kids. And yes, I ran with them, and I in the woods, and I hiked with them and camped with them. But mainly, what they do is they sit and they write letters to their parents. They go to group therapy 3 times a week. I went with them. They do some reading and writing. They try to explore. They try to talk about what went wrong in their lives, what happened, and usually and almost invariably, they're not bad kids. They're kids who did some bad things, but they're good, decent kids. And just something went wrong in their family, in their school, their neighborhood, and they just started acting out, and they got deeper and deeper into trouble.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's the success rate, either for these therapeutic boarding schools or for the more harder-line, discipline-oriented boot camps for kids? Because one thing, the poorer kids, of course, go back into the context of poverty.
Yep.
The middle-class kids, the upscale kids, they have the advantage of continuing on the track that you would associate with the social class that they're in.
Yes, although I'll tell you, I just had one of the kids who I knew when I was researching my book, one of the kids I knew just came over to my house. He just left a few minutes ago, and he's a really cool kid. You know, he was hanging out with me, and my children are young, we're hanging out. But when my kids were out of earshot, he told me about he went home after doing Swift River, after doing this program, gang therapy, and his parents were going through a bitter, horrible, nasty divorce. And he's from if you saw his house, I mean, they live in a pretty enviable place. Like, what is it, Grosse Pointe? Is that the neighborhood outside Detroit?
Sure, that's one of the wealthy upscale.
It's like that kind of – it's an East Coast version of that neighborhood. I mean, the houses are immaculate and the lawns are gorgeous. But he – you know, he went home to sort of continuing dysfunction and problems, and he got back into – drugs and stuff he'd done before. He's only now pulling himself out. So it's a mixed bag. I will say that of the main characters I followed, four kids, those four kids are doing remarkably well, considering they were really headed to some big problems just a few years ago. But, you know, these schools don't work miracles. They're not full of magic. The fact is, you take a kid out and you kind of help him with some problems and help him deal with some stuff, and you send him back to his neighborhood where there's a lot of problems. What are you talking about? Like a poor neighborhood or a rich neighborhood where friends are doing drugs and mom and dad are off, you know, working all the time or socializing all the time. Well, you know, good luck. It's not you can't just fix a kid in a 14 months or 18 month period, but you can help them. You can give them tools so they can talk to people, they can find some resources, they can go to AA or other things, and they can start getting their lives together.
The book is What It Takes to Pull Me Through, Why Teenagers Get in Trouble and How Four of Them Got Out. My guest, pardon me, David Marcus, and it's published by Houghton Mifflin. DaveMarcus.com, DaveMarcus.com, M-A-R-C-U-S is the website. And one of the things, big concerns, and you mentioned it is one of the problems of the first girl that you mentioned, is drugs. And drugs have been around, and I don't know, it's a problem with young people as adults see it as a problem. And in fact, any use, I mean, sometimes authorities see any use as abuse. Other people try to distinguish between use and abuse. Obviously, you cite statistics of 25% of eighth graders having used illegal drugs, almost a third of high school students binge drink at least once a month. Binge drink, that sounds abuse. But, I mean, how do you sort it out? I mean, when does drug use actually become, of course, it's all illegal, but when does it become dysfunctional?
You know, that's one of the toughest questions that I've encountered in this book, and you nailed it. Nobody's asked me that recently, but I ask myself that all the time. Look, kids, teenagers are prone to challenging, to pushing the boundaries, pushing the envelope, and the fact is they might try some substances they shouldn't. I don't endorse that, but it's a fact of life that it happens in some cases. But I will tell you that there's some interesting studies going on that shows that some kids have resilience. They can cope with some bad stuff, they can do some bad stuff, and they bounce back, they'd never do it again, that's fine. And there are other kids who just make it a habit, and they make it an addiction, they make it, you know, part of their life. And the thing that I found is that some of the kids I was writing about were, they didn't have enough sort of self-confidence, self-esteem, enough family supports, enough good mentors and good peers to really kind of pull them through, that they did, you know, the normal kind of experimenting or thinking about experimenting, and they just went off and off and off and kept doing it, and they really put themselves in jeopardy. Now, again, these are really cool kids and really neat kids, but every so-called normal teenager knows somebody like this, unless the kid has been isolated. You know your son, your daughter knows somebody who's just struggling with drugs and drinking and whatever it may be, drinking, driving. And I have to say that it just seems that they don't have the sort of family structure, and they don't have the sort of self-confidence, and they don't have the sort of the backbone, the spine, if you will, to withstand the kind of buffeting winds of adolescence and the problems of adolescence. And those are the kids who get in trouble again and again and again.
Yeah, I mean, with intoxicants, there's a certain risk. If 10 adults at 18 all begin drinking right at that point, one of them is going to become an alcoholic. We know that statistically. It's almost irrefutable.
Yep. But my question is, all right, so we know that's a given, but what if you nip in the bud? What if you get a 16-year-old, a 17-year-old kid who's just starting to get into problems or has gotten into a bunch of problems, and you send the kid away, which none of us as parents want to do, and you give them therapy, and you get them exercise, and you give them a structured regime. They get up at 6 in the morning. They make their beds. They go to classes. They clean up the school. There's no janitors at the school. And 100 kids clean it up. They help make dinner and clean up after dinner. And they do homework. Now, it's not a boot camp. You know, there's no gates. There's no locks. They can leave when they want to and escape. And people, they're out in the boonies, but people do try it.
No, we're back to the Swift River.
Right, so, Swift River. Right. But what I'm saying is, you know, what if you give them a structure and you give them some incentive and you make them go out and do community service? Because kids want to be a part of things. They want to be a part of life. Teenagers do. But you've got to sort of give them the motivation to do that. These kids, these teenagers, these students, they tutor little kids. They go help senior citizens as part of their everyday or weekly routine. And just some really pretty cool things happen to these kids. Once they sort of get straightened up and they get away from their families and their dysfunctional neighborhoods, you just see them shine as musicians, as writers, as all kinds of stuff. And I would say that we could do that with all kinds of kids. Yes, there's some kids who are prone to drug use and so forth. But what if you give them a healthy outlet? What if you challenge them? What if you make them feel a part of a community? Mm-hmm. Maybe, just maybe, in some cases you can really stave off those big problems.
Sure. Now, I was a pretty bad kid when I was in my teens. In fact, I didn't even graduate high school till I was 20 years old. And I was just fortunate to have a very, very wonderful family. And, I mean, in many ways, that's what kind of held me together and got me over kind of the bad stuff. But who winds up at facilities like Swift River? Who has access? Is this just like a real high-end kind of facility that only the wealthy?
Generally, the kids who get there have money. They're upper middle class, but there are a lot of middle class kids that the parents are so desperate that they take a second mortgage on their homes. Or, in several cases, 10% of the kids, they go to the school board and they say, "You haven't given services to my kids. There's federal legislation for the handicapped, but it's been expanded to people with emotional issues too." And so you can make a justification. You go to the school board and say, "You got to pay for my kid. My kid's really messing up at the school. You're not offering any services, and you refuse to give me services. You got to do this. You got to send this kid away and help me pay for it." I mean, it's tragic that we're at that point. On the other hand, and it's not fair to some local taxpayers. On the other hand, as I recall from the news in the last few days, we're about to put another $80 billion into Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't want to get political on you here because I have mixed emotions about mixed reactions to all this stuff. But I will say that we're on the track to spending well over $200 billion in Iraq to bomb the place and fix it up. I thought, as I recall, that oil money was going to be paying for this. We as a society should have a dialogue, should have a discussion. It's not a red state or blue state issue. We should be talking about what are our priorities. What are we going to do for mental health services? There are 29 million teenagers, and yes, most of them are doing fine, as I said. But even if 5% are struggling, and that's frankly maybe a lowball estimate, what are we going to do for these kids? What are we going to do so we turn them around and make them in safe, productive people instead of really troubled adults who are drinking and driving and causing the rest of us problems? I don't know, but it just seems to me that it's not just about money, but we're going to have to figure out what's important as a society. Is it important to keep bombing schools in Iraq and then building them up and then bombing again? I don't know. I'm not so sure it is.
Dave Marcus, in your book, What It Takes to Pull Me Through, you talk about one very, very successful institution or facility, Swift River, and yet, and maybe that's what you're getting at, that we, as it stands now, do not have the cash available to meet the needs of our own teenagers. What's 5% of, say, 30 million, 15, I don't know, 1,500,000 or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what we'd be looking for, these sort of therapeutic communities?
Well, that's the thing is that, you know, my argument is that, look, there's always going to be these sort of extraordinary schools where you send the kids off and they get some therapy and they get some help. But, Peter, why do we have to do that? Why don't we just say schools used to be, when you and I were growing up, the focal point of a community, and they were open late and there were things to do, and yes, kids got in trouble. I got into trouble. You got into trouble. But we had people pulling for us, and as the title of my book was, you know, What It Takes to Pull Me Through, we had people pulling us through adolescence. But now they'll padlock a school at 3:15 because, my gosh, you know, somebody might slip on the floor and sue the school board, and they'll close the athletic fields because they don't have enough money to keep them going for anybody but the varsity athletes, and they don't want everybody messing them up. What if we reexamine things? We're not talking about a lot of money. What if we made public schools viable, interesting, challenging places? What if education reform didn't mean no child left behind and all that Washington garbage, which is really, I call it, no test preparation company left behind. Because it's not, you don't just test kids, test them to prove that schools are working and make yourself feel good and have your property values go up. You know, you and I have been journalists and we've been in business, in this media business for a long time. Nobody's ever tested me since I took my first job.
Yeah.
That's not how you prove success. You need interesting kids who will challenge you, who will think creatively, who will do the work, who can be motivated to get things done, who can start businesses, small businesses when they get older. That's what you need, and you need schools that inform, that help them make those, you know, make business choices and help them think creatively. And I don't see that in schools. And we're not talking about a major amount of money. We're talking about schools that really inspire kids, great teachers, and interesting classes and activities in the afternoon. You know, I've been all over the country as a reporter, and once in a while I come across a place like I did a public school in California, where there have been some budget cuts, but the principal got her act together, and then another principal got his act together after, and the kids make Oh, I know. They do political science classes join up with the biology classes, and they do videotapes of you know, sort of fake political commercials and historical commercials, and they have the community in every Thursday night for viewing of these videotapes and discussions, and old people come, and parents come, and neighbors come, and it just seems to me that that's how you get kids involved, and you get them a passion. You give them, you get them, let them know it's okay to talk to adults, and you trust them to, you know, to operate the video cameras and do a good job. And you know, the school has got a thriving kind of community around it because it gives everybody a place to go and something to be part of.
Well, that's great, and that concept is something that just made me think back to my high school days and how my high school experience was like 180-degree opposite. The main thing they tried to instill in us is to sit quietly in rows, speak only when spoken to, and just repeat back what the teacher had told you. To someone who probably would have been a candidate for Ritalin beginning when I was about 8 years old, if they would have been around then, I fortunately escaped that. But tell me a little more about Swift River that you talk about in your book, what it takes to pull me through. Because on one hand, we're telling kids, you know, drugs are bad, don't take drugs. And then now increasingly, we're pumping them full of pharmaceuticals.
Yeah, that's a really – I get that. I get in the book, we have what one of the counselors calls pharmacological personalities. Just what you said, you know, five-year-olds jumpy in school, whoop, better in kindergarten, better put them on Ritalin, you know. A seven-year-old's looking a little sad, you better give them some antidepressant. I mean, I'm not – look, pharmaceuticals, these pills sometimes can help, but we're a society, we want an easy label, and we want to say the kid's bipolar, boom, that's a problem, put some meds on them, and, you know, let's clam them up. The fact is – you need to look at the whole kid, and you need to look at have a school that looks at the whole issue. And so you need schools to think creatively and say, there are some kids, mainly boys, and I was one of them, who cannot sit still, but they're kind of bright and they're kind of neat kids, but they're just not going to sit still in first grade, and that's how it is. But instead of pumping them full of meds, let's take them outdoors and let's have them doing projects outdoors. You know, let's give them a little bit of individualized education. Let's put some high school kids working with them on projects so they can do some science projects and stuff like that. Why don't we do these things as a society? Why don't we just sort of put kids in little boxes and say, oh, you must be the ADD kid, you must be the depressed kid, you must be the messed up kid, you must be the schizophrenic kid, or you're the perfect, you know, A student. There are some kids are a little bit of all those things.
Well, it's convenient in mass society rather than decentralized face-to-face communities, as you were indicating, as a model for education. And also people make a lot of money off of it. Not people. Shouldn't say people. Or some people, but mostly corporations make a fortune.
Sure. You put little labels on kids and you decide what pills they should have. And pediatricians don't have a lot of time with them these days because of the way medicine is. And so they say, yep, put the kid on stimulant, you know, Ritalin or Adderall or something like that. And, you know, that'll be it. But kids learn in different ways, and kids mature in different ways, and we've got to take that into account. We've got to – education is not just for processing them and putting labels on them and putting, you know, throwing them to next grade or next specialist. It's really taking the time to get to know the kids. And, frankly, as I said, it's saying to the kids, we have high expectations. You're going to be here in the afternoon. You're going to be here in the evening. You're going to help put things on for the community. You're going to put a show on. You're going to go to the senior citizens, the retirement home a mile away, and you're going to read to the people, or you can go to the elementary school, and you're going to help. You're going to tutor these kids. You're a teenager. You're a part of the society, and you're going to help us. That doesn't mean going off to fight in Iraq. That means in our streets, in our neighborhoods, in our communities, you are going to be a part of the fabric of this place, and you are going to give as well as taking.
Well, let's go back. In fact, we're almost out of time, Dave Marcus. Let's go back to...
I was just starting to rant. Wait a minute.
We can do it another time.
Okay.
I'm sure you've got six more books ready.
I'm sure my family will kill me if I do any more books.
Anyway, let me see if I can reconstruct the question. Oh, yeah. That because of the last generation's experience, that more and more people see the necessity of education as being... to open the young person to all ideas and new ideas, and not just, as one friend of mine said, to kick the animal out of them, to make them willing to sit in front of a desk or an assembly line, mm-hmm. and understand that that education should be exciting. On the other hand, here in the Detroit area, and I know it's no different around the rest of the country, we are in the richest country in the world, throwing teachers out of their jobs, closing schools.
Yep.
How does this, like, new consciousness and this new reality meet?
But it doesn't. That's the problem. Is that here we know more than we ever knew in our history about how kids learn differently, how brains work, because we have this brain imaging. We have this scientific capability of seeing that.
Yeah.
And we know that kids. Some kids learn by doing. Some kids learn by writing. Some kids learn by hearing. And we can challenge them in different ways. And yet, as this country, as a country, we're saying to kids, not just in Detroit, everywhere, you better test well, you better sit still, you better shut up. And what do? We get rid of the frills because budgets are tight. So you get rid of art, you get rid of music, you get rid of vocational ed. That's exactly what you need for the kids who are not going to just, you know, have fun doing pre-calculus. But kids who can be inspired and who can start small businesses and who can be a real part of the neighborhood revitalization. We're getting rid of all those so-called extras. It's ridiculous. And it's not just Detroit. I just got back from Ohio where they're cutting all those things. Massachusetts, where I am, has had terrible budget problems for years. You know, I got to tell you, I'm a journalist, and I love journalism, and I'm so angry at my fellow and my colleagues because I've been working on this book for 4.5 years, and I've been all over the country, and I've seen that people are struggling. Parents are struggling to get decent health insurance or any health insurance, to make ends meet, to pay the mortgage, to pay the fuel bill, to put gas in the car. And we're not writing about those issues. There's some really important issues. We're not writing about teenage mental health and how teenagers get along and how they're part of the community. We write about who's up and who's down in Washington or in the congressional or in the Senate races or in the presidential race. You know, I don't care about that stuff as a person. It's not a political issue of red versus blue or Democrat, Republican. I want to know about how we make it as a society. What do we do when our parents get older and we need to find health care for them and a place for them to be? What do we do when we're stretched, when we're trying to have a job and keep track of our kids and be part of a community, and yet we've got commuted for a long time, and we don't know if that job is going to be shipped overseas in a year?
Well, those are the challenges. And for more, you're going to have to go, because Dave Marcus, you're one of those guests I know we could talk for about 2.5 hours.
Yeah, well, I don't want to bore people. But
you're not boring people in the slightest. I just looked at the clock on the wall, and yeah, I'm going to have to say goodbye.
That's fine, but I really appreciate it. And again, www.davemarcus.com. As you said, I'm raising all these issues, and I really, you know, I've gotten emails already from people in Detroit, and I know after the show airs, I will too. But
I'm going to say it slower for them too. It's davemarcus.com, M-A-R-C-U-S, and the book is What It Takes to Pull Me Through: Why Teenagers Get in Trouble and How 4 of Them Got Out. It'll be on my website, peterwerby.com. Dave Marcus, thanks for joining me.
Peter, I really appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
Thank you for tuning in to the Riffs Night Call. Night Call is a public affairs presentation of 101 WRIF Detroit. The opinions expressed on the show do not necessarily reflect those of the management or sponsors of WRIF Radio or Greater Media Detroit. Night Call is hosted every Sunday night by Peter Werby. Now stay tuned for more Riff Rock, coming right up on 101 WRIF Detroit.
What'd you say there, fella?
There are so many choices in mortgages these days for the first-time homebuyer and even for experienced homeowners looking simply to refinance. Searching for a mortgage can be a frustrating and confusing time. Why not let Financial Independence Mortgage make your financing search easier? Financial Independence Mortgage provides you with all the relevant information about mortgages and will find you the perfect mortgage to fit your personal needs. It's as simple as filling out a one-page application, and Financial Independence won't make you wait long for your approval. Typically, you'll get a response within 24 hours. Get a free quote from all of the top lending institutions so you know you have a fair comparison of what's available to you on the market. You simply can't find a better, more thorough, more personalized way to ensure yourself of getting the best mortgage at the best rate possible. Competitive rates, very fast closing times, and Financial Independence Mortgage can handle exactly the type of mortgage to fit your personal needs, whether or not you have some blemishes on your credit. Find out today the difference Financial Independence Mortgage can make for you at 248-594-7585. That's Financial Independence Mortgage at 248-594-7582.
Tired of low-priced LASIK ads that promise a great price only to find that it quadruples when you actually go there?
Well, you'll never have that experience with Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center.
At the Lake Laser Eye Center, there are no gimmicks and no games.
Only $9.99 an eye, or as low as $33 per month per eye.
You know your costs up front with no hidden charges.
You receive top personalized service and see Dr. Combati himself at each visit.
The Lake Laser Eye Center is not an assembly line designed to get people in and out as quickly as possible.
They are committed to you
and offer
offer the highest standards of eye care using the state-of-the-art Visix S4 laser with active eye tracking. One visit to Dr. Kambati at the Lake Laser Eye Center and you'll understand why he's one of the most respected and accurate eye surgeons in Michigan. You owe it to yourself to receive the best care for the best price. Appointments are going fast. Call Lake Laser Eye Center today at 1-877-UC-MORE. That's 1-877-UC-MORE. Again, 1-877, the letter U, S-E-E-M-O-R-E. Or visit UCMORE.com. These are your eyes, and this is the care you deserve. You've searched today like every other day for those annoying reading glasses. It's gotten to the point where you just can't see the newspaper without them. Well, now you don't have to search for your glasses anymore due to a new procedure from Dr. Kambati at the Lake Laser Eye Center called Near Vision CK. Near Vision CK is a safe, simple, 5-minute procedure that's usually done on one eye and for just $9.99 or as low as $33 a month. This exciting procedure will finally eliminate your need for reading glasses. Call Dr. Kambati today at the Lake Laser Eye Center, 1-877-UC-MORE, to set up your free consultation. You'll see Dr. Kambati himself, and he'll take the time to answer all of your questions and thoroughly explain the Near Vision CK procedure. That number again is 1-877, the letter U, S-E-E-M-O-R-E. Or you can visit the website, www.useemore.com, for Dr. Kambati at the Lake Laser